This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
D'Lo Brown interfered with a frog splash and hit it on Severin, getting some revenge.
I know.
What the hell was it? What was that laugh? It was like an old cartoon fucking Hanna-Barbera dog or something. It was like Snidely? Was that the fucking dog that laughed like that?
JR's got a little more time than I do to sit and actually write a whole show.
This is the third time you said it to me today now. I'm really curious.
Well, I'm not saying that you have nothing to do. I'm just saying that
your day... I'm curious how I have more free time than you.
No, I'm not...
So what does that mean?
I don't know.
I know it's been a rough, and I know you said this long, grueling podcast game.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. Are you guys just joking around for the next hour?
Come on, did you say D'Amato, late 20s, 30s?
I was being...
And you included yourself in that as well?
I was being nice to him. I am still technically in my 30s.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
What the fuck is a shock wall?
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
He's going to fall through the shock wall.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard. I know you're fed up, ladies, but keep your head up.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening, coming off an interesting weekend for both myself and my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, you were here this weekend.
I was.
It was a brief stay.
Mm-hmm.
We had a great Saturday.
Yes, we did.
And then we had a very rough Sunday, both of us.
Yes.
let's talk about Saturday.
Okay. Quick. Saturday was a lot of fun.
We had a good time.
Yes, we did.
Went to the official restaurant and bar of Place to Be Nation. Of course, that is Boneheads.
Yes. And I want to, first of all, JR, pleasure as always talking to you on this Monday night. I want to thank the guys and gals from Boneheads who entertained and served five of us. Well, Rotella was there, so four and a half. And we had a great time. And I took a big leap, and we do have documented proof. Well, you may see it one day. Of course, being a wing place, they have a competition for their wings, you know, the hottest sauce.
Mm-hmm.
On the menu, there is a sauce called Hell's Bells.
Yes.
Which is pretty hot. And we actually got a cup of it and brought it home and brought it to our evening festivities. But that's not the competition sauce. The competition sauce is called Creeping Death.
Mm-hmm.
And may I tell you, now I know why they call it that. Yes. The guy...
Death was creeping on you all day and night.
Yes. Matt, I believe his name was, right?
Yep.
Matt, one of the co-owners, was nice enough to give me one wing. And it wasn't even totally drenched in the sauce, just half of it. About 15 seconds, I tasted some good, good pepper sauce. And then after that, I felt like I did a shot of battery acid. And that's how bad. I mean, it was all those shows like Man vs. Food and all these competitions. They're not making it up. JR could give you proof. I had one wing. I just wanted to taste it. And I literally, my face was melting off my skull.
Yeah,
it
you
was,
were hurting. You were definitely
it
hurting.
It was hot stuff. It
yeah,
was hot
tears
stuff.
Are coming out of your eyes.
Yeah, hot stuff.
Yeah, I mean, poor Mr. Flanagan, his nostrils were burning and he was sitting next to you.
Yes.
Or behind you even. So we do have video. And
okay.
Once
yep.
we finally get the Place to Be Nation YouTube channel up, this video will surface, along yes. with the Jeff of Shadow Wing eating.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
For
anybody that wants to do seven of them, good luck. I'll probably never see you again. But JR, we did have four fantastic flavors, regular flavors. Highly recommend the Rooster.
Yes.
Which was the sriracha sauce, which was very good. And you recommended the War Pigs. What is the War Pigs?
Oh, that is like a General Tso's chicken.
Yes. And it was very good. Not hot, not spicy, but very tangy, very tasty.
It was, it was delicious. Everything at Bonehead's is great, of course. So if you're ever in Rhode Island, be sure to stop by. It is in West Warwick, and they are fantastic. Big supporters of the site.
Yes.
And we are big supporters of the restaurant. So, Scott, after that, we had a pretty good rest of the day. Played a little wiffle ball, hung out, grilled a little bit, hung out with Sleepy Rotella. Got some good camel toe shots.
And his injured wrist for over-swinging a wiffle bat.
This kid hurt his wrist swinging a wiffle ball bat.
And just to make it worse, tonight, he played tennis.
What an idiot. He was like in tears during wiffle ball. It hurt him so bad. He was swinging one-handed.
Oh, my God. It was
and we played a little superstar shootout.
Yes.
Table hockey. Yep. That was cool.
Yes, it was.
So, after that, Scott, you left first thing Sunday morning because you had a ticket to go see the Mariano Rivera celebration.
Yes.
Yankees versus Giants. However, you had quite the time getting there, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I left your house about 7:15. I wanted to get on the road and get to Dr. G's house because he and Mrs. G and little Mia G and Armento and actually also my brother, PTB Nation participant. We were all going, and I was going to get to their house, and hopefully we can all get on the road at the same time. Well, I was cruising. The rain had passed. The sun came out. Everything was great. And then right about exit 57-ish in Brantford, for those that live in Connecticut, all of a sudden I started hearing in the back of my car, and I'm like, what the
fuck? Did you think Rotella was in the back?
I thought maybe he was sleeping or snoring or something, or the camel was snoring something, one or the other. I pull over to the left median, which was the wider end of the median. I get out of the car, I turn around, my left driver's side, the back rear tire, smoking, literally steam coming out of it, and a massive – it looked like somebody threw creeping death sauce on it. I mean, it's literally fucking melted. I'm like, motherfucker. It was like 10 after 9. I was on a roll. Well, I called AAA. They had an issue with my membership number, and then I told them where I was on the highway on 95. I mean, I literally just passed Troop F, which is one of the state police barracks, literally four exits ago, telling them where I was for an hour. The tow truck couldn't find me. I'm the one blue car sitting on the left side of the fucking road on the quiet part of 95 in the shoreline, and you couldn't find me. Couldn't find me. The tire blew at 9:09. They finally got and pulled and jacked it, put the donut on. I'll get a tire this week. And I got on the road at 10:32.
Oh,
I was furious. I hustled as fast as I can. They had already left. I told them not to wait. I didn't want them to. That's stupid. They said, oh, get to Stanford, take the Yankee Clipper. I wasn't going to make that either. Drove all the way to the Bronx. And that drive wasn't bad. I actually got
on the donut, which is not safe.
On a donut, which is not safe in the Bronx roads by any stretch. Got off Jerome Avenue, exit 2A. You know the route to the stadium, JR, of course. I got there at 12:05. I'm like, this rocks. Because they said be ready by about 12:30 for the start of the ceremony. So I'm like, this is awesome. Of course, parking sucked because I was there late, and I got on the 61st Street garage, which was $35. That was a disaster. And by some stroke of God, I got up, got to my seat, sat next to my brother and Armento and Dr. G, and they were running late. They were still putting together, of course, Metallica's stage in center field. So I did get the entire ceremony. I didn't miss any of it. So it seemed like the PTB gods were on my side. Maybe it was my dad. Maybe it was somebody else. But they got me there, and I got there before it started. So I was very happy about that.
Crazy.
Now, getting out of the garage, for those that have been to the stadium, and I know you have, JR, it's the garage next to the platform going to the train across the street. You know where that is. And it's not like a typical three-story garage. It's very sprawling, and it doesn't all – not every area looks the same. And literally, my brother and I were – he came with me, so I wasn't – So I had someone to talk to on the ride back up, and it took me forever to find my car. Getting out of it was a mess. Total disaster. Highly recommend getting to the stadium early if you can. I couldn't, but
I'm surprised you made it when you did. Honestly, with all
I am too. Yeah, I am too. I was very. I think my father's spirit, maybe your father-in-law's, even though he was a Red Sox fan, maybe the spirits of them got me there on time, and it was a. I'll talk about the ceremony in a minute, but. You didn't exactly have the most stellar Sunday either, did you?
No. You were here when my refrigerator started making clicking noises and weird shit, and the ice wasn't working. And yesterday, it pretty much just gave out. So I spent the day researching, trying to figure things out. I actually made a service call. I really didn't want to, though. This is one I really wanted. I wanted another stamp on that man card. I've done the fence, the patio, the grass, and now I wanted to fix this fucking refrigerator on my own.
Right.
So I gave in and made an appointment for tomorrow. But then through the grace of the great Mr. Jeffrey Jahelka, he talked me off the ledge and said, you can do this. We'll get it done. We did a little research together. Then this morning, I said, you know, let me poke around a little bit more online. I stumbled into a number for GE, some like back office number or something, that was associated with this room. With this issue back in like 2006 or whatever. So I call, and I had taken a photo of the serial number, the model number. I get this really nice lady, this great lady, and you guys all know me. I bitch about all these service people, but when something good happens, I make sure to spread the word. Mm-hmm. So this lady was very helpful. I gave her the information. She pulled up my fridge. I said it had been purchased in 06. Obviously, I just moved in last year, so I had no idea when it was bought. And it was affected by this issue, but the 5-year period had passed to get like the free recall or whatever.
Right.
But they said we can sell you this piece at a discounted rate because you're part of this issue. So for $50 plus shipping, I got this new piece, and I'm going to put it in tomorrow night when it comes overnight. And I saved myself, I think, quite a bit of money, because even if I bought that piece on my own, it was going to be around like $1.50. So, it pays to do a little bit of research and to speak up and call around and ask sometimes, and you never know what you'll find out, what you'll save. So, and she also confirmed for me what the issue was, which is I was like 93% sure that's what it was, but I wasn't positive. Mm. And I didn't want to spend the money and not be sure. So, anyway, it worked out. Hopefully, we're about halfway through this thing. Tomorrow we'll know for sure if I can fix it. And then, in the midst of all this, of course, word starts circulating on Facebook like around 2:30, 3 o'clock, I'm watching football. That's Kent County Water, which is the water system I'm on, is under a boiling water advisory, meaning they detected some kind of E. coli or something in the water supply.
Oh, brother.
So, of course, immediately I start snooping around, and then word spreads, it hits the news stations later that night. So I made a dash off to Walmart, loaded up on some bottles of water, some jugs of water. But, Scott, it is very inconvenient to have to use the refrigerator in the garage and have no running water availability. I'm not complaining because I know things can be a hell of a lot worse. Just minor inconveniences, you know, having to boil water or, you know, bathe my daughter with, you know, Poland Springs. But you learn not to wash your hands very quickly. You get used to it. But apparently they already passed the first test today, but they say it has to do 3 tests in a row. So we're thinking by Thursday we'll be back up and running.
Now, did you turn on your faucet? Did the water look weird? Was it like odd color?
No, because it's not all nothing. It was like one tank somewhere, you know, it was like in West Warwick or something.
Right.
But once it fails that test, they have to notify. And even the strain that's in there, I guess, for like just healthy, normal people really won't damage you. You'll just get like maybe you'll get if you are affected, you'll get like nauseous and you have diarrhea or something like that. You know what I mean? Like you'll just it'll be like a flu kind of. And your body should fight it off and, you know, get whatever medication. But they recommend young children and elderly, you know, to really take precaution because it can wreck them up. So,
yeah.
No, it looked fine. I mean, obviously we used it for, you know, this first broke on like Friday apparently, but they don't get the test back until like 2 days later when they run the tests.
Geez.
So, you were brushing your teeth with that E. coli water when you were here on Saturday.
Well, you know what? Combination of that and the creeping death.
I know. Who knows what it was?
Jesus.
We'll never
know. By the way, the reason it's creeping death is every minute that you burp it up, you feel it.
Yeah.
It's like burping up rust. Seriously. But a moment, if I may, JR, about Sunday, because I will say one happy thing that happened. And I may have to do an article on placetobenation.com about different generations of Met fans, because there's two different kinds. There's me and there's older Met fans.
And that's it. No new Met. I believe.
Well, me, I'm like a middle of the road Met fan.
To
new generation.
Okay.
Yes, I'm not old. I wasn't alive in '62.
You sure?
1662, maybe. But no. I witnessed the crowning.
You rooted for the Hudson's Fur Trade baseball team.
Yes, I did. The Red Sockings and the Dodgers. I witnessed yesterday a ceremony honoring not just one of the greatest players ever and easily the greatest closer ever, but just one of the nicest guys ever. Mm. There's not one person, JR, in this era of steroids and HGH and, you know, and the cocaine years of the 80s and all this other. Never has there been a guy with a perfect resume as a human being just as much as a player. I mean, everybody used to think Steve Garvey was, and then it turned out he has like 8 kids with 9 women or something. So even he was not perfect. But I'd like to have somebody find me dirt on Mariano Rivera. Anything. You can't. Even players on opposing teams say the guy's a class act.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, you can say what you want, whether you believe in the closer or whatever, however you want to classify him. But you can't deny the effect he has as the face, one of the faces of baseball, and what he does off the field.
Yes.
All the good he does. I mean, to get honored like he has in every park, you know, besides the Red Sox 0-4 trolling nonsense.
Yeah, that was, you know, a lot of people got, he didn't get pissed. But then there's another great thing about him. He's like, all right, whatever. Yeah, it's, it was
well,
funny.
Well, what's he give a shit?
Yeah, other Yankee players got pissed off at that. But,
but yeah, you know, lots of cool stuff. And if you read, I haven't read the full article yet, because I just don't read anything about Ian O'Connor because I don't like him. But apparently he did a really good piece about all the people Rivera has met. Because if you don't know out there, in every city he's gone to this year, he stopped and like sat and held like an hour-long chat with either you know, workers at the stadium or team officials. These guys you wouldn't really, you know, have a chance to speak with.
Right.
And they all contribute to the story, like 7 or 8 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Gave personal accounts on how he helped change their life over the last year. And apparently it was really, really good.
Yeah, it was. And they did a nice thing. Obviously, his number was officially retired because might as well do it now because it's never going to be used anyway. And the Yankees did a very nice thing as Jackie Robinson's wife and daughter were there. And there was a nice plaque inside Monument Park honoring Jackie Robinson, the first non-Yankee to be honored in Monument Park.
Yep.
Obviously, there's the Pope is modern, but he doesn't count. So it was just and guys that came back, JR, Jeff Nelson,
everyone.
John Wetland.
Yeah, all the guys from.
Yeah, all the way to O'Neill, Bernie. They were getting crazy pops. Ironically, JR, another funny thing, as the in between innings, they would have pre-recorded messages from other players, other athletes, other TV stars, movie, music. And of course, some people got booed, like Pedroia got booed, and you know, when Poppy got booed, right. Which I thought was a little. I mean, come on, it was like Cena the night Flair retires. Like, come on, get over it for 2 seconds. But ironically, JR, no shock. Who do you think got the loudest heel heat of anybody?
It was Mark Sanchez.
Mark Sanchez,
well earned.
Biggest pops were, of course, Mattingly. Yeah. Obviously, they did these comments as they went through the stadium this year. Vin Scully did a very nice one as well. But I mean, the numbers speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think the greatest statistic for me, 141 innings of postseason baseball, 0.70 ERA, and two home runs allowed. Mm-hmm. Two. Of course, the most glaring, here's a little trivia for you, JR. You know what one of them is. Of course, it was the Sandy Alomar one in 97. Do you know who hit the other one?
Postseason or World Series?
Postseason. Two postseason home runs he gave up in his career. One was, of course, the Sandy Alomar one in 97.
I'm going to
and then one more.
A year or a team.
2000 World Series. So you know who he played.
Was Ventura?
No. Jay Payton.
Jay Payton. Okay.
Jay Payton. It must have been that ninth inning.
I don't remember much about that World Series. I kind of looked at it.
Believe it or not, I barely do either because I remember Dr. G's aunt had a heart attack and he barely remembered. It was a very tough time for him. But yeah, that was probably game two when the Yankees had a 6-0 lead and then Mo had one of his few bad ninth innings and the Mets scored 5 runs. That was probably it. But anyway, two home runs in 141 postseason innings. And I'm talking to people about it today, and there are a couple of Met fans who are looking at me like I kicked their dog.
Oh, like, get over it.
How dare you be in there? Look, I'm not going to lie. I'm not a Yankee fan, and there are plenty of Yankee fans I know, you and Dr. G doesn't do it as much, but there's a few others. Throw your jabs, whatever. I could sleep at night knowing I'm fine being a Met fan, and it's whatever. But don't sit there and judge me because I'm paying respect to an unbelievable, bona fide, first ballot Hall of Famer just because he's a Yankee. Grow up. Really. I know people that respected Mike Piazza in his run, Tom Seaver. My dad loved Tom Seaver, and my dad was a diehard Yankee fan. He loved Tom Seaver. So did my brother. Get over it. When you see talent, you respect it. Period. You don't have to like it. You don't have to buy their jerseys or their T-shirts, but you respect it. And you go in there, and I don't have to buy a Mariano jersey to say that I thought the guy was the most incredible closer in the history of baseball. So it was. I have to say, it was just an incredible experience to be there. And will he be unanimous? No, because no one ever is, because sports writers are dicks. So, and that's not going to happen. But he should be. Next year, Greg Maddux is first year, and a lot of people think he should be too, but that's another debate for another day. In any event, JR, there were three Yankee fans I wished were there to join me. One, of course, was obviously you. I think you would have, of course, enjoyed it. My other brother, Jeff, couldn't make it. And then, of course, obviously, my dad would have enjoyed it as well because he watched plenty of Mo. I took him to one of Mo's first saves back in 96. So, anyway, I know we talked a lot about it tonight, but it was a great moment and a great day sandwiched in the middle between a shitty morning and a shitty evening. So, in any event, and JR, we had a blast on Saturday with all of our pals. And kudos to Boneheads. Tremendous restaurant. Again, if you're in the area, West Warwick, stop in. They're good people and good food. Great food.
Okay.
All right. And there's our week. Is that our because? And then we don't have to do it later. No. All right. By the way, just to kind of reset, it is episode 255 of the Place to Be podcast tonight. And we do have a topic. We're not just going to rant about flat tires.
Hey, what is going on here?
Ooh, did you bathe in that water? Good God. Ooh. Bathe in this creeping death. Talk about creeping death. Ooh. Tonight, of course it is, as you heard, it is the Vintage Vault. And tonight, we celebrate a big return. It's good old JR's boy. Or in the immortal words of Mike Tyson, Cold Stone returns.
As darkness envelops the land, the night of reckoning is here.
Judgment Day is upon us.
Four mortal men, warriors all. Driven by desperation, ruled by the cruel hand of fate, seeking the ultimate glory, the coveted grail that darkens the soul,
the merciless reign over us.
Two jealous suitors, bound by a common passion, consumed by envy, scorned by sins of the flesh, betrayed by
God have mercy on their souls. I feel like
that was a good open.
I think that's like the most used clip of all time in these opens.
Yes. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you Unforgiven 2000.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of storyline tying up in this show, and some perplexing booking decisions as well.
It's a very interesting show. There's a lot of storyline tie-ups and also other kind of random matches here to fill time as they move along. But it was a pretty active month, more active than I remembered it being.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. And then some of the decisions you kind of shook your head at and wondered, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And we'll document them. Kind of a not a superior undercard and a main event match that, after watching it again tonight, earlier today, annoyed me even more. And then some good matches that had some strange endings. Mm-hmm. So let's dive in. September 24th, 2000, live from the First Union Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. ECW country. They were still breathing, barely. They were bouncing, meaning the checks, but they were still breathing. We've been in this building before, so we don't.
Because I am barely breathing.
We've been in this building, so we don't need to know the history. Great attendance, 19,315. So the place was jacked. Good buy rate, 1.5. And your announcers, good old JR, Jim Ross, and of course Jerry the King Lawler. Except Michael Cole comes in, frosted hair and all, to do three matches in the middle, and we'll tell you why when we get there. But Lawler had to take a spell for a few matches, but then he came back, and we'll explain why. We did have a big news development on Heat. What about matches, JR?
No matches.
No matches. We did have a storyline development, though, on Heat.
Tell us about it.
And that was, let's turn back the clock, shall we?
Okay.
November 14th, 1999. Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. Of course, it was Survivor Series. And what happened on that night, of course, the mysterious Lincoln Continental that plowed over Stone Cold Steve Austin. And he was out ever since. Well, of course, we saw him for about 15 minutes back in April at Backlash when he helped The Rock win the WWF title from Triple H. And then he was gone. But now, as we head into September, he was coming back for good, healthy from his neck surgery, and ready to find out who was driving that Lincoln Continental. Who did run him over? Well, Shane McMahon said on Heat that he had documented video evidence of who ran him over, and he was going to show it tonight at the pay-per-view. Of course, nobody. Jerry believed him. JR thought it was a bunch of
hogwash. Were you surprised they kept the continuity going?
No, not at all. Okay, you had to. This was a storyline you couldn't screw up.
Right, you couldn't just come back. There's a reason they did it the way they did it, right?
Yeah, you couldn't just do nothing. Yeah.
All right.
And I remember on WWF.com, leading up to this moment and then a little bit after, they had like a who would want to hit him? Who did it? Who done it? And then they used to have like the screen with like boxes on it, and you click on a guy's face, and you know, gives the evidence why he would want to hit Stone Cold. It was really cool, actually.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It was like Clue, yes. And except not in the conservatory with the candlestick, but it was cool. It was cool. So no, you definitely needed the continuity. It was one of the biggest storylines coming up. So no, definitely they needed the continuity.
All right, so that wraps up Heat. Now before we get into the pay per view, Scott, we do have a special guest with us.
Oh, we do, do we?
This man was grandfathered in. He was on the final allowed permitted request to join us for a vault outside of contest winners. And then he won a contest anyway. This does not fulfill that obligation, though. This was promised to him before. And, of course, the one and only 2013 PTB Nation Trivia Tournament winner, Mr. Mike Poulin. Michael, how are you tonight?
Good evening. I'm doing good.
All right. Good to hear.
Good to have you on, Mike.
So we just intro'd the show, we set up Heat, and we talked about Austin returning quickly, which we'll get to much more in depth later, and now we're about to kick off the show proper here, so let us lead you through the promised land of Mr. Poulin.
All right.
All right, our opener, little eight-man tag action.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the, one very hot team and one kind of sitting there doing their thing against a very growing heel faction. The two teams... The Acolytes, of course, Farouk and Bradshaw, kind of floating around, nothing too crazy going on. And a team that got some pop when they were announced, so they were definitely swinging over to the face side. I mean, they kind of had been, I suppose, but they really were over now, and that is Bubba Ray and Devon the Dudleys. Who, if you noticed throughout the summer that year, they got hotter and hotter, and you know, they were heels at the beginning of the year,
mm-hmm.
but they definitely are full-blown faces here. And they came out to, well, of course, they're in Philly, so that didn't hurt either. Their opponents, the very evil and legitimate heel faction, I mean legitimate heels, not, you know, Attitude Era cool heels, but actual guys you hated heels, the Right to Censor. Now, JR, when we spoke last, Steven Richards was there, of course, as their leader. The Good Father was there. He had just turned as Godfather to Goodfather. Bull Buchanan was already there. But since then, JR, a new member has joined. Tell us about who that new member was.
It was kind of an unexpected member, and originally it didn't seem like it was going to happen. On the August 31st SmackDown, Val Venus officially fired Trish Stratus for causing him to lose the Intercontinental title of SummerSlam, ending their brief partnership. And on 9-4, Val had a showdown with the Right to Censor, where Steven Richards told Val he was already one of them. He had ditched his porn star image, changed his tights, and dumped Trish. Val denied it and said he believes it's the parents' job to monitor the children, not the RTC. Steven let it go, but warned Val that if he's not with them, he's against them. Later that night, Val teamed with Road Dogg to take on Godfather and Bull Buchanan. As the match wound down, Bull DDT'd Val on the floor and knocked him out. He and Goodfather scooped Val up and carried him to the back. The next Monday, Val came out after the RTC defeated the Acolytes and plastered Farouk and Bradshaw. He shook hands with the RTC and officially joined their cult. That week on SmackDown, Val appeared decked out in a white shirt, tie, pants, and shoes,
and told the world he had not been brainwashed, but rather he would realize he was missing something from his life. He examined his lifestyle, realized his actions did not help him become a better man, and did not make the world a better place. He left the ODF know that he was now joined the fight against violence, vulgarity, and scantily clad women. So Right to Censor has now expanded again.
Yes.
And added a good work rate guy to the mix. You know, we had Goodfather and Bull, who are kind of bruisers.
Mm-hmm.
And Stevie's just not really wrestling full time with them. So they needed a guy who could go out there and be a legitimate contender for some titles.
Right.
Mike, what did you think of Val joining the Right to Censor?
I actually don't remember watching that Raw, but I think it was good to kind of replenish his character a little bit.
Yeah, I think I agree.
So did you think, Scott, did you think it made sense, though? I mean, did you, or did you think it...
Oh, no, it definitely made sense. I mean, this forced? Is... No, this is kind of the same situation as was The Godfather. I think the gimmick... I mean, he was a good worker. The gimmick had run its course. 2000 was very different than 98, 99. You really didn't need this kind of weird... the fans were a little smarter now, so even though the era suited porn star kind of thing, at the same time, 98, it was very... kind of almost cartoonish porn star. Whereas, I mean, the crowd now would want something really hardcore, and, you know, there's only so far you can go. So it was smart to get rid of that character, and Val was one of those guys. He was pretty much already there anyway. You know, he had the white tights already, he had the white boots already, and cut his hair. So he had already, as it says, he had already kind of shed the gimmick anyway.
Mm.
So it made sense.
You think he should have changed his name?
What, and just became Sean Morley automatically?
Or something else.
Or something else. I mean, look, if they were going to get rid of the name Val Venus, they might as well have just gotten rid of his name and just made him his real name. But, it would be great if they, like, came up with a long name for Val instead of Valboski.
Valerie.
Valericious or something, you know, something funny.
Valerie Venus.
Valerie Venus. Which,
no more.
Does not want to say that.
So which the Acolytes
and Dudleys. Which rhymes with boop.
Yes. The Acolytes and Dudleys had their little thing going on, too. They actually got, like, a little mini feud because the Acolytes had been hired by Kai and Tai during the match with the Dudleys, and they interfered and helped Kai and Tai win. So them and the Dudleys ended up kind of fighting over a couple weeks, and they had a big brawl at a bar. And then during the brawl, they kind of became friends and beat the shit out of everyone else, and then were hanging out drinking after the fight. So they kind of earned each other's respect. So that's why they team up here. I guess the RTC would have been fucking with them. So the RTC pick up the win. Val pins Bubba. Stevie gets a pretty good pop in his hometown. Kind of gets that ECW rub. And then he gets the shit kicked out of him after the match. I was kind of surprised how stiff this beating was. They really tossed him around pretty good.
Yeah, it was
Did you think the Right team went over still here? Did you think the Right Censor still needed the win? And B, did you think it made Stevie look a little weak to have him get the shit kicked out of him after the match?
No. Number one, yes, they should have won. They need to keep building momentum. They obviously – I can't – my only thing is I can't believe Bubba Ray's the one that got pinned. I thought one of the Acolytes because they were the less hot.
Yeah, they seem weird that they're still kind of getting protected in the ring.
Yeah, I thought that either Farouk or Bradshaw should have eaten the pin there. Should Stevie got the shit kicked? Yes, because I think his role as the leader is to protect his bigger guys, so he was doing it for the good of the team.
I just don't know if you thought it was too soon to have him get his comeuppance. Okay.
Nah, not at all. As long as they won the match and the whole faction was still going strong, he could have gotten a beatdown, and I don't think it would have hurt him. Mike, what do you think?
At this point, I don't think it would have hurt him to get the beatdown. And yes, it was very stiff, as I noticed from watching it back on YouTube yesterday. Very stiff beatdown. I don't think it hurts him. I think he's protecting his guys. And in the end, you know, he's going to get beat down again eventually anyways.
What did you think of Bubba Ray getting pinned, though? Do you think that was odd?
That was weird because you think one of the Acolytes would get it since they're really kind of just in there in that match as the other face team.
Mm.
Yeah, the Dudleys, they're in a weird spot. They really were due to get back into the title mix soon here. I feel like they're on the verge of being... I know they were in there for SummerSlam, but they almost felt like a throw-in at SummerSlam.
Right.
And I know it's really been Hardy's and Edge and Christian had the feud going on, but they kind of seem like they've gotten lost in the mix here. So I think pretty soon they got to get them back into things. So we'll see in the coming months. But that's it for that match. There's your opener. RTC wins, keeps their heat, keeps rolling along.
Yeah. And, I mean, the match itself is fine. I mean, potatoes, but there's really nothing to get into. It's just a
brawl.
Yeah, it's a typical big man.
Crowd was into it because, you know, like we said, it was in Philly.
You got the Dullies. You got Stevie. You got the heat of the censorship stuff. So it's, you know, it's fine. It's a fine opener for this town.
Yeah, yeah. No, nothing crazy. All right, so backstage, Mr. and Mrs. Faksheem are sitting on the couch, and Triple H pretty much tells his wife, I know you're, you know, whatever you think about your little gal pal there, Kurt Angle, is irrelevant. He is going to take the beating of his life. He's going to get destroyed. I'm going to do it, and that's that. And then this whole thing ends. Mm-hmm. So he was laying down the law to the match later tonight.
Did you get excited hearing him talk like that?
Oh, I was beads of sweat were rolling down my forehead.
You like when he dominates you verbally?
Yes. Yes. Stephanie, get out of the way. You shouldn't be hearing this talk. All right. Our next match, I'll be honest with you, JR, I wasn't expecting this feud to continue, but obviously there was a reason for it. And we'll talk about it when the match is, you know, as we talk about the match. But at SummerSlam, we pretty much thought that the feud between Taz and Jerry the King Lawler had ended when Jim Ross took a candy jar to Taz's face,
yeah,
and gave Lawler the win. However, that did not happen.
And I was glad it was at the end. I was. Because I didn't want to see it end with Taz losing to fucking Jerry Lawler, of all people.
Yeah. How do we get here?
All right, night after SummerSlam, Taz threw down Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross at the commentary table during a match with Steve Blackman. The next week, King teamed up with Chris Jericho, defeated Taz and Midian in under 5 seconds when Lawler rolled up Taz when he wasn't paying attention. A week later, Lawler cost Taz a match with Al Snow. After the match, Taz grabbed the mic and said he couldn't compete with all the politics going on, and that he was a guy nobody obviously wanted in the WWF. He said he became just another victim, and he was tapping out. On SmackDown, Taz went to Commissioner Foley and asked out of his contract, saying he didn't want to be there anymore due to all the politics, he just wanted to go home. Foley offered him a match with Lawler at Unforgiven, but Taz hesitated, said the same crap's going to keep happening. Foley promised that it wouldn't, and Taz accepted the offer. And they also made a deal that they couldn't touch each other before then, so that's why Taz accepted. Later that night, Taz popped up in the front row of the crowd and started harassing the King and Michael Cole, dumping popcorn on their head and making funny faces and holding up signs. That Monday, Taz showed up on Raw in a torn tuxedo and took on the role of a ring announcer. During the matches, he hung around ringside and harassed Lawler as the two jabbed the various one-liners throughout the show. That week on SmackDown, King and Chris Jericho picked up a win on Taz and X-Pac, but this time the win is by DQ after Taz jumped Lawler with a strap, playing into the newly announced pay-per-view strap match. Taz, to me, at first glance, this seems really bad. You're like, all right, they're burying him. He's losing every week in a minute, and Lawler keeps fucking with him. But this was a feud that really kind of turned him around and let him show some personality. I thought him jabbing with Mick Foley was pretty good on that SmackDown, and then him doing the ring announcing was really funny. He was just really letting loose, and he even did some guest commentary. And I think it was this feud that really put it in their minds that maybe he could do something like that. Maybe he could be an announcer and be entertaining in that role. Because he really showed his speaking chops during this feud. Mm-hmm. And he was legit funny for a few weeks there.
Yeah.
And I liked the way it turned. I liked the strap stuff. I thought it fit into Lawler's persona well. They used the strap on each other a couple times. So I didn't mind the rebuild to this match. I felt it was better than the original build-up.
Yeah. I think it expanded Taz's personality. I definitely think that he needed a little extra time. I didn't think it was going to... I'm not disagreeing with you, JR, that it shouldn't have ended at SummerSlam the way it did. I'm surprised it actually didn't end at SummerSlam. I thought they were just going to end it, and he'd look like a chump. And
well, yeah, once Waller won, you just assume that's...
That was it, yeah. I agree with you that was the wrong way to do it. I just didn't think they were going to actually attempt to fix it. Mike, what did you think of Taz's... a role over the summer? Do you think this was a good use for him? Do you think they were underusing him? What did you think?
Well, at this time, I thought he had kind of fallen off after a hot debut earlier in the year. And I think that this was a good role, and I think him doing the commentary led to him eventually getting on SmackDown with Michael Cole about a year later.
I agree. I think this definitely served as basically a tryout, I thought.
Yeah.
And again, he was really good. So you knew something was up the sleeve here of Taz heading into Philly. And after about, you know, 4.5 minutes of pretty basic brawling, nothing special, again, mm-hmm. between these two. And I liked it here, too, because the strap was a weapon. They didn't have to do the stupid drag to the corners nonsense.
Yeah, exactly.
The crowd really goes nuts. Because Raven returns, or debuts, however you want to say it, shows up. Lawler gets this look on his face like, what the fuck? Raven drops him with a DDT. Taz covers and gets the win. And the Philly crowd ate this up. They love this. Raven showing up. And I thought this was really good booking. I thought in the end it was worth having Taz take that stupid loss to SummerSlam to rebuild his character on TV and then to bring Raven in here. I thought it was really made up for everything that happened at SummerSlam. And of course, Raven is formerly known as Johnny Polo. Last WWF in 1994, managing the Awesome Quebecers. He would head to ECW in 1995, became a multiple world and tag team champion, being very involved in a long and dramatic feud with Tommy Dreamer. Mm-hmm. Raven moved to WCW in 1997, had an up-and-down time there, won a couple titles along the way, had the Raven's flock, and just walked out of the company when Eric Bischoff offered anyone their release. He left in 1999 and returned to ECW. He had a no-compete clause, so he could not return. He could not go to the WWF for a year. So he showed up in ECW at the time of the debut on TNN, and he actually won the tag titles with his former foe, Dreamer. Of course, ECW was sinking fast, and when Raven left ECW, Paul Heyman reportedly owed him $78,000. Raven approached the WWF in June of 2000 about returning. However, with the situation involving Raven's drug use and what was going on with Steven Regal at the time, which we'll touch on, Federation officials were hesitant. They decided to sign him, but give him time to clean things up before debuting. In a funny story, legend has it that upon seeing him in a wrestler-only meeting, Vince looked around and asked, who the fuck hired Raven? That's one of the best stories. That's when we get asked Kevin if it's true. Actually, yeah. Has he told that story?
I don't think he's gotten to
I know he touched on Raven
a few...
I feel like he said that before, though, on the show. I feel like he's confirmed that it's true. But we'll ask him again when he's on.
True. Yeah. I was a little surprised. I don't remember reading anything.
No.
Maybe I did.
I think it was known.
Tito, one of those guys on Lords of Pain, or one of those.
I think it was known.
Yeah, it was pretty known. When? Who knows? But, I mean, obviously, logistically, it made perfect sense to have him.
Yeah, that's why I think made it so obvious that they were coming to Philly, and it just seemed like it made sense. I think there was buzz out there. I think it's one of those things they may have leaked, like not on their own site or anything, but I feel like the news was out to try and get people to tune in and watch and see Raven.
Tune in.
Mike, what did you think of Raven's debut? Did you think he fit in well?
First, before I get into that, when did he leave ECW exactly? I don't.
It must have been earlier that a little bit earlier that year if he negotiated.
Because he was tag champion there in like March.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit later. I think it was like that summer. Yeah, I think he was off TV for a little bit.
Yeah, because I remember him and Tommy won the belts that fall when the Dudleys left. Him and Tommy won the tag strike. That was when he made a surprise return to ECW. From WCW, he came in, and him and Tommy was like, this crazy, oh my god, they're teaming together, and then they beat
Right here, SummerSlam 2000 was his last appearance with Francine. She aligned with Just Incredible, turn on him. His last televised match was against Scotty Anton.
Riggs, an old rival.
SummerSlam 2000 was on April 22nd.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, because that Tommy Dreamer match is actually on the first ECW DVD, the unreleased one. That came out like last year.
Yes.
So there you go. He left in March. What did I say? April.
April. Late April.
Yeah.
So left around the same time like Mike Awesome and Lance Storm did, I guess.
Yeah, they're probably trying to save money where they could.
Save money, yeah, because they knew their checks were bouncing like basketballs.
Yeah. So Raven was off for a while, cleaning himself up a little bit, and then he shows up here.
Yeah.
As for his debut, like Scott said, I don't remember actually reading anything about it, but it was a nice little shock, and the crowd popped for it. I love JR saying he's not even on the roster.
I know.
Nice call, guy.
Yeah. That's a gorilla thing. That's like an old school Federation years. Be like, Jack Tunney needs to look at the roster.
It was good, though. And JR obviously was really pissed off that they screwed the King over. Mm. And this is where King gets taken out. And,
but yes, this is probably one of the few strap matches I like because I don't like that match type.
Right. Oh, yeah. The whole drag to the corner thing is annoying. I like that this was just a weapon, using the strap as a weapon. Yeah. So, Lawler, this feud finally ends here. Taz and Raven now are a unit, kind of ECW angry alum. And I think this is something that could have really went somewhere, and I don't think they do as much. I mean, it's not a surprise, but they don't do as much with it as probably they could have.
Right.
Raven gets a bigger push late, like in a few months.
Right, yeah. But, yeah, out of the gate here, it would have been cool to have them do, like if Taz kept up the bitter thing, and if Raven maybe would have brought up how he was banned. You know, this don't get into. I mean, there's no room for them, honestly. But there's something that could have been done there that just don't do as much. So, as we said before, Lawler leaves. Michael Cole comes in, and he'll take over for the next few matches here now. Yes. Scott, backstage, something occurs.
Yes. All night, our man, PTB extraordinaire K-Squared, Kevin Kelly, had been roaming around outside the First Union Center in Philly, waiting for one Stone Cold Steve Austin to return and begin his investigation into who ran him over 10 months earlier in Detroit. Well, sure enough, finally, Steve Austin arrives, place goes crazy, new T-shirt, has the same camo hat. Kevin asks, "Welcome back. How you feeling?" And he's, I gotta call him out on that, the way he was so like happy-go-lucky. "Welcome back. How you feeling?" It's like, so Kevin was great with that. He looks at him and goes, "I ain't asking any questions." And he throws Kevin into one of those, you know, those sliding metal garage doors. And Kevin sold it well. Only Kevin. I gotta give, when he comes on for the second half recap, I'll call him out for being so happy-go-lucky, but I will compliment him on selling the toss into the metal grate. So
he was paid handsomely for that bit.
Yes, he was. Yes, I'm sure he was. He was paid handsomely with probably some catering. But we'll talk to Kevin about that. But Stone Cold is here. He's in the building, and he wants answers. Will he get them? Well, we'll talk about it throughout the show. But he is here. First on-camera appearance since helping The Rock win the WWF title at Backlash. Wait for it.
This is like fucking Blackman Heaven 2000. He's yes. been all over the place these last few months.
And he'll be in more of this show.
Love
it. Right now, our first title match of the evening, the World Wrestling Federation Hardcore Championship on the line. It is a Hardcore Invitational.
Yet another one. Is this a third of the year, pretty much?
Third of the year. 10-minute time limit. You can have as many pins as you want, but whoever has the title after 10 minutes is the champion. Steve Blackman, of course, came in as champion. He won it at SummerSlam against.
And had been dominant since.
Yeah, he'd been kicking the shit out of guys. Finally, JR, you must have been pleased because you're a Blackman guy. Finally, he was actually being used the way he should have been used.
Oh, it was beautiful.
A monster.
Yeah, it doesn't say much. He's actually showing some personality, too. He had a little catchphrase, and he had his nunchucks and everything else, and just a silent assassin. All these guys would try and take the belt, and he would just wipe anyone out who came at him. And it really played into his strengths perfectly. They found the perfect gimmick for him. You could argue, did he fit the 24/7 rule better than Crash, even? I mean, in a way, differently.
He was the opposite.
Right, Crash was always running. Yeah, Blackman wanted to battle. Yeah. And I want to ask both of you guys this, because I was thinking about it today. Do you think at this point Blackman was the best hardcore champion they had had?
Yes, absolutely.
I agree.
Me too.
I always liked how the JR would put over the fact that a lot of guys bring weapons, or a lot of guys have to look under the ring for weapons, but he brings them with him.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes, he put it over big time. I agree. Good call, Mike.
I think it was actually Cole who put it over in this one, but... They also said that there was like a 24-hour moratorium or something for the next night.
Yeah. They said that the 24/7 rule was wiped out for one full day until Raw, just because whoever won this match wouldn't go through 10 minutes of crap and then someone just jumps him and pins him right away. So yeah, that was part of the deal. But I agree. I think Blackman's been the best hardcore champion. I liked Boss Man and I liked Al Snow. I thought they did a great job in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say Snow is probably the second best of the stretch and Boss Man third. But Blackman's just been the most believable, incredible hardcore champion. Like,
yes.
We don't need all the garbagey brawls backstage. And those are fun, but he is just really believable as a guy who just wants to beat the piss out of people and accepts all challengers. And he was just dominant. He was the most dominant champion they had with this title.
Mm-hmm. At least they're not doing any more evening gown matches.
Yes, much better than that.
Jesus, no.
But I thought they did a nice job actually adding a little bit of cred to this title, something you never would have imagined they'd do.
And it got also, more incredible as the next year or so went on, actually, I think.
Yeah, and Blackman started it. I think he was kind of the rebirth of the division in a different way.
Yep. All right, so here are the participants. Of course, Blackman, former hardcore champion, and got the standard bearer up to this point for 2000, Crash Holly. Former Kai and Tai member, or I guess current Kai and Tai member, Sho Funaki. Test.
Sho Funaki?
Yep. Well, he wouldn't be that funny for a while, sadly.
I'm surprised. I don't know if Taka was hurt. He had been on TV. It's weird he's not in this match.
That is very weird.
I think test. It was only open to former hardcore champions, and they pointed out that Funaki won it at WrestleMania for like 10 seconds.
Oh, yes. Okay. Good call.
Yes, I remember hearing – good call, Mike. I remember hearing JR say that today when I was watching it. Yes, former champions, and Funaki had it for a minute and a half at 16 or something like that. Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Test, one half of TNA, which at this point, were they even still around?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yep. They were still hanging around.
Test had a little bit of a resurgence. He actually had a little mini feud with Triple H. We'll get to what happened, but I'll just say he kind of finally got a little bit of closure from November.
Yeah, he does. No,
but him
right.
and Albert were still together with Trish here at this point.
I thought they were. I just wasn't sure. I thought maybe it had ended, but I wasn't sure. Former European champion, Perry Saturn.
And the new European champion.
Yes. We're on the 831 SmackDown. Who defeated Perry Saturn, Mr. Poulin?
Al Snow.
Yes. And the
I
best part about
that.
Yes. And the best part about Al was that he was bringing it back, JR, to our favorite, kind of kicking it old school, just like our favorite former European champion, D'Lo Brown.
Yes.
Who used to come out of various European.
Well, the thing with D'Lo, he would just come out announced from those countries. Snow took it up a notch. And he would actually dress the part. He had like specialized music for each one. Mm-hmm. So tonight he's from Italy. And so the, you know, what does everyone want? Head is in Italian and all the words and the music was.
Oh, that's what that was in Italian?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Holy crap.
He's like,
Yeah, it was good. And he was all dressed up. Of course, he had the framed photo of Tony Danza that he gave to Jim Ross. And
yes, yeah, he brought a pizza. That was very stereotypical. He's carrying a pizza to the ring.
It's all right. And it was good, Lord. Though. I liked Snow. I thought I liked him as the European champion to add a little bit of hilarity to the mix. And, you know, I got no issue with Saturn, but Snow definitely was a better European champion at this point. Because the title, Saturn's is very plain.
Mm-hmm. They didn't really do anything with Saturn once he got the title.
No, he had a couple TV matches here and there, and that was it. I mean, he was more involved in the stupid mixed tag feud with Terry and Kat and everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
But Snow was good. Snow really took back to the role, and it let him show his personality a little bit again.
Mm-hmm. So, again, the rule was as many pins as allowed in this 10 minutes, and whoever had the belt after 10 minutes was the undisputed hardcore champion. The match was pretty much the same as WrestleMania. You know, guys running around, getting hit, falling all over the place. Crash would temporarily win back his hardcore title. He pinned Steve Blackman just under 4 minutes in.
And then a second later, he gets decked.
Yeah, he gets popped. 12 seconds later, to be exact. And Perry Saturn held it for about 4 minutes and 54 seconds before Steve Blackman would get it back at 9:01. He would hold on for the last 59 seconds. And
I love how the guys in the last minute of the match were all going after each other instead of Blackman.
Yeah, because Blackman went to the aisle to kind of duck out and hide. Not hide, but he was just kind of waiting there for them to come to him. And then, yeah, like you said, they all started fighting each other instead of trying to get Blackman. So Blackman retains there. Keeps his hardcore title. Inoffensive little 10 minutes.
It's a fun match.
Yeah, yep.
Yep, it's a fun match. So Steve Blackman... and good for him, he deserved to keep it, retains his World Wrestling Federation Hardcore Championship. All right. We go backstage. Stone Cold Steve Austin roaming around, looking for answers. And who does he find? Kurt Angle walking around the hallways, preparing for his match with someone later on. And... immediately, and I caught this right off the bat today. I want your guys' opinion. Right off the bat, you can already tell that these two were destined to work so well together.
Mm-hmm.
You can just tell by the look in their eyes. They knew each other. For some reason, they just knew that they could bring hilarity to anything they do together. And a lot of that, I think, is obviously Kurt, who's a funny guy. But even Steve, who I think at times doesn't show it totally a lot of times.
Unless he's playing basketball with midgets.
Exactly. Well, yes.
Don't you question my basketball abilities.
Kurt introduces himself, sticks his hand out to shake it. Of course he doesn't. Steve doesn't, and says, you never had a chance to win a gold medal. So he offers one of his gold medals to Steve. And Steve said thank you by beating the shit out of him and kicked the crap out of him in the hallway and walked away. Did you agree? Let me start with you, JR. Do you think immediately just by, and I'm not saying it just because we know what would happen eventually with them. I just really felt like the minute they were on camera together, you knew something special was going to happen.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I thought the chemistry was definitely there right away, too. And you could tell they were, I mean, just two really smart, quick, funny guys. So it was obvious that they were going to blend well. And, you know, Kurt's innocence and goofiness played well with Austin's just, you know, not taking any shit from anyone kind of.
Yeah. What do you think, Mike?
I think that they were destined to have great matches, which they would in about a year. And I think this segment was actually pretty good. And that's about what I think.
Yeah. I think Steve knew the kind of humor that Kurt had, and you saw it a lot on camera, obviously, and I'm sure he was paying attention. And I think he realized that this guy's pretty funny. I think we can have some fun. And I think deep down Stone Cold was probably like, you know, it's probably nice to have a guy who actually can be funny and a bad guy at the same time, because obviously Triple H's character didn't have that, and The Rock pretty much only puts over himself. So I think it worked out good that he had a chance to kind of bounce off, you know, silly humor with, kind of like Bulldog Owen, that kind of thing, Pillman.
Yep.
That fun from 97. So anyway, Stone Cold continues to investigate, and Kurt is left lying in a crumpled heap on the ground. All right. This next match is a match I used to hate. But after watching it the last couple times, I really liked it. And I underestimate one of the based on my comments on Bigelow34.proboards.com, I underestimated one of these opponents. Chris Jericho, fresh off his third pay-per-view loss of the year to Chris Benoit, taking on a guy who kind of floating around a little bit, but they ended up finding a good storyline for him instead of just becoming a jobber, and that was now former DX member.
Xbox.
Of course, he took on Road Dogg at SummerSlam, and DX is pretty much gone, although he's still wearing the tights here. How did these two somehow get together, JR?
On the 9/11 Raw, X-Pac interfered in Chris Jericho's match with Triple H and drilled him with a spinning heel kick and X-Factor. A week later, he jumped Jericho again and laid him out with a pair of nunchucks.
They have a match on SmackDown or something? I used to have a tape of the SmackDown before this that they had a match on.
Was it definitely before this or was it after?
It was before.
Let's see. Well, they were part of the tag match. It was Lawler and Jericho versus Taz and X-Pac that we mentioned earlier. Jericho,
I think it was 2 weeks before that.
On SmackDown or Raw?
Yeah, SmackDown. So I remember a match where X-Pac won by a backslide using the ropes. It was the one that
It was a six-man. X-Pac, Edge, and Christian defeated Jericho and the Hardys. Oh, yeah, right here. X-Pac pinned Jericho. Yep. September 7th, SmackDown.
Yeah, that's the one I remember because that's one of the ones that I taped that I had for a long time.
Then Jericho cut a promo, I believe, right, Jay?
Yes. Not much of a feud here, but they just kind of have been picking and choosing each other on TV, and X-Pac still with, kind of loosely with DX, him and Road Dogg and Triple H are all kind of loosely associated at this point, but they're all pretty much split off on their own. X-Pac started carrying the nunchucks around and using those as his weapon of choice. And this is also in the phase where X-Pac was not really losing many matches, singles matches. Tag, he'd lose. Sometimes he'd eat the pin, or he'd lose by DQ or something, but he was very rarely pinned at this point. So this was kind of a nice win for Jericho to beat him clean by submission, 9 minutes. And then X-Pac attacks him after the bell, and of course that will continue the feud. Kind of funny that this is 1 year to the show of their last pay-per-view one of the last pay-per-view matches.
Yes.
At Unforgiven 99, when Ken Shamrock was the last-minute scratch, and they put X-Pac in the match against the recently debuted Jericho. So here we are 1 year later, back at it. And this is clearly just filling time for Jericho while they figure out the next feud for him, because he's done with the Triple H stuff. He's pretty much done with the Benoit stuff for now. So they needed something to keep him busy.
A feud he'd get involved in a couple months.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, this was a great match. And I remember when we first were going over the show a long time ago, I thought that X-Pac had immediately become a JTTS. But, I was incorrect. This was actually a pretty solid feud for him. And he looked pretty strong leading up to it. He started pulling out the nunchucks and started whipping Jericho down with him. So, yeah, I was a little premature in my assessment that he would end up becoming a jobber. That would probably happen a little bit later on. But, yeah, the match is really good. They had good chemistry. You know, they kind of wrestled similarly. They worked at a pretty crisp pace.
Didn't they have a bunch of matches in WCW?
I don't know if they had a bunch.
They had one where Jericho won the Cruiserweight title.
Yeah, they had that one. That was Sold Out 97.
No, it was after that.
Was it after that? It was
Eddie and Six fought there.
Maybe it's 98, something like that. But yeah, they did have a couple of title matches in WCW. So, I mean, they knew each other pretty well. And even the changing of styles, because obviously X-Pac's style kind of changed a bit when he got here in 98, because he was dealing with a lot of injuries. And Jericho obviously still had the same kind of repertoire, but he grounded himself a little bit, got a little more mat-based. And they definitely had unbelievable chemistry. And this was a pretty good, solid 9 minutes. This is what you would call an effective way to fill time at a pay-per-view.
As opposed to how they do it now.
Well, yeah, and with whatever they did in June with Patterson and Briscoe. What do you think of the chemistry between these two, JR?
Yeah, I thought they had pretty good chemistry as well. I thought it's clear. I mean, they're both very good workers, and they had worked in – remember, Jericho's given credit before, and Vince kind of programmed him with X-Pac to learn WWF style. So they obviously had experience, and they're just both good workers. So it's not a surprise that they work well together.
Yeah, exactly. And Jericho gets the win. He taps out, gets X-Pac to tap out to the Lion Tamer, a little over 9 minutes, and then actually X-Pac gets a little heat back as he starts. He pulls out the nunchucks and hits Jericho again with them afterwards. So maybe they continue this feud on TV for a little while. But X-Pac tries to get his heat back by hitting the nunchucks after the match anyway. So. Feud doesn't end here, as I mentioned, but a good match, though. Well, one of the hidden gems of the 2000 mid-card. So. All right, yes. So we go backstage. After Kurt Angle got the shit kicked out of him by Austin in the hallway, he goes to Commissioner Foley, who's in his little cubby hole there with goldfish and lawn items, and says, you know, he complains about what Austin did to him. So Foley decides, well, you're a pain in the ass, so your match tonight with Triple H is now no DQ.
And that's final.
There you go. So so that match later on tonight is now a no DQ match. Speaking of Stone Cold, he goes into a locker room and goes face to face with your World Wrestling Federation champion, The Rock. They shake hands, a little détente. Austin says, you know, I know we're cool now, but just want to let you know, I found out that was your car, your rent-a-car that hit me back at Survivor Series. And, you know, Austin, man, didn't jump him. He looked at him and said, what's the scoop?
Well, he admits, like, he says, I know it wasn't you. He just said, do you remember anyone going through the, you know, your bags or snooping around that could have taken the keys?
And he goes, people walk in and out of locker rooms, bags are left open. You can never trust any of these guys. You never know what happens. And then suddenly, JR, a newcomer, we haven't really mentioned this guy much.
He's not too new, actually. I think this is the kind of the end of him. He had been around for most of the summer.
We hadn't really mentioned him much, right, like on pay-per-view. But
he was on Sunday Night Heat a lot.
Yeah, he was on Heat a lot. He'd pop up on SmackDown intermittently with junk.
Just Joe.
Yes, Just Joe, who was just some guy that used to pop in and out of locker rooms trying to dig up rumors and dirt and gossip. And Just Joe says that he heard some things in the dressing room about who might have been driving the car, and I know some things. And Austin thanks him by beating the shit out of him. He fucking threw him out of the room in the air.
Yes,
it wasn't
yes.
like he dragged him, but he literally chucked him. It was hilarious.
I heard Just Joe was a sorry son of a bitch.
Yes, and he chucked him right through the door. He gives Rock this look and then walks away, and Rock just starts laughing his ass off. It was actually a very funny segment.
Yeah, Just Joe, portrayed by Joey Legend. Mm-hmm. Of course, indie guy you hear a lot about. I think he was up from Canada, right, with Edge and Christian and those guys?
I think so, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he was on the Canadian Indies. Made his debut on July 2nd, competed as Just Joe. When he's in WWF, his gimmick was a messenger who tried to stir the pot. His catchline was, the boys in the back are talking. He always trying to stir up a bad situation. Yep. On October 20th, 2000, he'd have the distinction of jobbing to the Brooklyn Brawler. And that he would leave shortly after.
Poor Schlo.
Obviously, this is like a shot at like Meltzer and those guys who would leak stories to the yep. dirt sheets and shit like that. That's clear what this whole gimmick was supposed to be mocking. And
yeah.
He was funny enough in the role. Mm. Yeah, he was a fine worker, too. Probably deserves a little bit more of a push in general. Yeah. But he was fine for this kind of thing. He's almost like the 2000s GTV. You know, 99 with GTV. Now we have Just Joe to kind of advance these little plot lines along.
Yep.
So nothing special out of him. But
no, not at all. Next up, we have our second title match of the evening. The World Wrestling Federation tag team titles are on the line. And is this a feud ender? Perhaps. But these two have been battling pretty much for almost a full year. And then finally, actually probably goes even earlier than that, but a full year strong. And that, well, your idea. And on this night in Philly, they wrap it up inside steel cage. Edge and Christian defend the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships against the Hardy Boys. And remembering the skit on SmackDown, JR, and you'll let us know about it now. The humor that Edge and Christian continued to display was just top notch.
Right. Well, this feud was going on again all the way since SummerSlam. First, Edge and Christian brought out midgets mocking as the Hardy Boys and Lita. Then they brought out old people as the Hardy Boys and Lita, and they were really just kind of digging and digging. Finally, the Hardys defeated Edge and Christian in a non-title match to earn the title shot here. On 9/21, Edge and Christian are mocking the Hardys by using their old clips as adolescents with fake belts, basically their backyard stuff, and they were dressed up as like movie reviewers. The Hardys went to look for them. They found them. Edge and Christian then blindsided them with stiff chair shots, really stiff chair shots.
Not out of them.
They really crushed them. Lita got wiped out in the process as well. So,
and she's not at ringside until later in a match.
Right, yep, yes. She's not there initially. And then Mick Foley would make it a cage match to really up the ante. So this feud, this looked like finally the blow-off of this one.
Yeah.
That had been really raging, I mean, God, for a year, you could say, one way or another. Yep. They were friends and foes. But, you know, after SummerSlam with the Hardys not winning the tag titles, you had to assume finally they'd get them here in Philly in the cage. It made perfect sense. And this match was pretty good, 13 and a half minutes. You know these four guys have great chemistry. And I liked the finish. I liked how the continuity where they hit Edge with the concerto on the cage. And then he falls back, and they hit the floor and win the titles. I thought that was perfect because, of course, all the build to this was Edge and Christian using chairs to abuse them. And it was really a perfect payoff to both Edge and Christian's title reign and this feud. And if you take out that little blip against Too Cool, you really had a dominant reign since, since Mania with them?
Yes.
Pretty much. So. Yeah, for the most part. Yeah. Mike, who did you like more in this stretch? Who do you think, even though one – take the titles out of the equation. Who do you think were in your opinion, had the better year per se? Like, who do you think grew more? Take the titles out of the equation. Who did you like more at this point?
Well, I was never a Hardys fan to begin with until Matt was singles later on. So I would say Edge and Christian.
Okay. They definitely had the chemistry at first. You know what's weird? I remember this match. At first, I didn't like the whole both guys had to get out of the cage stipulation. I thought that was weird. But then I remembered that that's pretty much how you win singles matches in cage matches. So I kind of understood the continuity.
Yeah, well, that's always been
continuity.
The step for most cage matches with tags. I mean, that's just how it goes, right? Because at least
it just seemed odd. It just seemed odd with a tag match that you want to leave a guy by himself. You know, that just seemed weird. But in any event, I mean, most of the tag matches, like back in the old NWA, like Rock and Roll Express and the, you know, Ole and Arn and that kind of stuff, those kind of matches, usually did just
the NWA, Campbell.
What
the hell is this shit?
He's looking in the mirror, is what he's doing. This is just a fantastic match. What are your thoughts on the match, Mike?
I think this is a good match, and I think the finish is a bit of poetic justice, as you guys pointed out, that Edge and Christian always use the chairs. Although I think the Hardys should have won the titles the month before, and maybe this should have been the blow off to the feud.
So you would have had the Hardys come in as champs here.
Yes, and maybe beat Edge and Christian and move on
beat
to
him, beat him
either
anyway.
TNA or RTC.
Interesting. Okay. What do you think of that theory, Mike? JR? Think that maybe the Hardys had won this one, and what, do you think they could have gotten the same kind of effect out of it if the Hardys had the belts coming in?
No, I liked that they screwed him at SummerSlam.
Okay.
Because that was Edge and Christian's thing. And Edge and Christian had a good month. They actually beat The Rock and Undertaker on Raw in one match, so they had really been built up as a tough team, and I think the Hardys winning straight up here meant more than winning in a TLC with another team in the mix. And here they can say they defeated the champions to win. I thought it was a cleaner way to end this feud, than having the Dudleys in the mix. And you get Lita coming in for that payoff. She takes out Christian, and I just thought it was a better blow.
Sweet with a nice Frankenstein using the cage.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I'm trying to remember if this match is on anything. I'll have to check our good friend Graham's.
Surprisingly, I don't think it is.
I don't think it's. I don't know. It might be on one. We'll take a look during the break because I'm curious. Was he in the cage too?
I was surprised that it didn't turn up on the Cage Match DVD that came out a couple years ago.
Cage Match, or I wonder if it's on the Allied Powers DVD. Well, we'll take a look during the break. But because I have a feeling it's on at least one. I'm not sure. But your Hardy Boys, new World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. First reign in over a year since they had that little cup of coffee with it in 99. And here they are once again for the first time in, yeah, probably like a good 13 months, 14 months, Tag Team Champions again. As for Edge and Christian, they get kind of a change of pace as time progresses. So, but this is one that this was coming their way. They had to get the receipt, so they did that. All right, they play a promo for the next night on Raw, but JR, and then Mike, your comments. JR, what was so special about Raw the next night?
All right, we'll talk about this more, I think, next week in detail.
Okay.
But there was a lot of back and forth as the big contract with the USA was coming due up in the fall. And for the first time in a while, Vince and the WWF were kind of found themselves in a good position to start a bidding war. Ratings were up, product was hot, looking to make some extra money. So they kind of balked a little bit with the USA. USA kind of played a little hardball. And USA was starting to look for maybe to take things in a different direction. They wanted to be a little bit more of a, I don't say classier network, but kind of distance themselves a little bit from the wrestling product and go more towards like drama and different stuff like that. So with that in mind, and Vince looking for the biggest payout, he contacted TNN and Viacom. Of course, that's where ECW had been airing. But even with ECW on the network, TNN was like, well, there's obviously no comparison between the 0.4 that ECW brings in and, you know, the fours and fives that Raw's drawing. So Viacom and Vince negotiated for a while, and they came to a deal where Raw would move over to TNN and Heat would go to MTV and all these other specials and everything else. Of course, Viacom was a pretty big conglomerate hooked up with NBC, and with the XFL going to NBC, it just all made sense for them to link everything together. So for the first time in history, Raw would no longer be on the USA Network, and the night after this show would be the first Raw on TNN, and the last on USA was a week before until October of 05. So they leave for TNN. Of course, they were transforming from the Nashville Network, which is what they were still with ECW, and becoming the National Network would be the new TNN, kind of getting away from all the country music and everything else they had really been the home of.
More Gary Chapman.
No more Gary Chapman, and Raw moves away from Farm Club and Lil' Kim shaking her ass and everything else over to the Country Network. But I didn't know what to think of the move. I was kind of sad, but also it felt like USA wasn't giving them – I don't know, maybe this is just me being like a dirty homer, but I feel like they weren't giving them a lot of respect at the time. Like, they were still bumping them for the fucking dog show. They were still bumping them for the U.S. Open. And, like, the ratings were huge. The product was red hot, and they're still getting bumped for this stupid shit. And it just felt like – they didn't really get as much. They weren't maximizing the potential with their network partner. And I thought they did a nice job with Viacom of really taking advantage and getting onto all their other outlets and using the synergy of the networks. And I thought they belonged in a group like that at this time. I feel like they weren't really getting the bang for their buck with USA.
Yeah, it was sad for me because, you know, being a fan of primetime, going all the way back to 1986, 85 into 86, it was weird not seeing wrestling on USA on a Monday. Very weird. And, you know, the USA news update and, you know, all the La Femme Nikita and, you know, Silk Sockings and all that stuff. It was weird. It was very weird to see it on another network, and we would experience that the next night. What did you think of this switch, Mike?
I think it was good just from what Justin just said, because I don't remember all that other stuff that he mentioned. But I think what they should have done with the actual show is what I'll get into later when we get to the main event.
Okay. So there you go. So USA, farewell for now.
Farewell to the.
Yep, to the show.
It's funny farewell. Because they didn't know. I don't know if it wasn't finalized, or for some reason they didn't really start advertising the switch until like the week before. I don't know if they didn't want to fuck with people and screw them up, but. It wasn't until the Raw before that they really, and they went heavy on that show. They name dropped it a lot on commentary and had a couple little slates and everything else. But
they did the same thing the week before the Homecoming show a few years later.
Right. Well, that was different. That was due to a deal with what was going on. We'll get to that.
We'll get to that down there because I have an opinion about what TNN did as compared to or whenever they would be called eventually as compared to what. But we'll get there. We'll get there. We'll jump ahead.
But right, but they did a hammer home and. And we'll talk about this, Scott, next week. But the ratings did take a hit initially because obviously people, you know, are so used to that a habit, and maybe they would have missed this Raw and they weren't sure where to follow if they weren't online, whatever. The rating does take a little bit of a hit, and one that they didn't really ever quite totally recover from.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
There was also less homes had TNN at that point than USA.
Yeah, that would be fixed somewhere down the line. But yeah, that was a big problem too. All right. Get back to the show itself. Foley, Commissioner Foley, sitting in his little cubby hole with his yard equipment. Overcomes Triple H. They're talking, you know, a little détente. You know, beat the shit out of each other. But you know, we've been kind of friends, and just want to let you know this.
Kind of angle a little bit like they did the Monday before.
Yep. And regardless of what they feel about each other, Hunter hopes Foley will call it on the middle. Foley says, "I have no ill will, believe it or not, towards either of you. I just want this to be a fair fight." And I will make sure that it is. And again, of course.
Well, it's no DQ, so we don't have to worry about that.
Exactly. But, you know, Foley wants to make sure that everything's on the straight and narrow. So he will referee the match. JR and Michael Cole are chatting, and the King's music plays. And Jerry Lawler, after taking three matches off from the beating he took at the hands of Taz and Raven, Lawler returns to the broadcast table.
How is your sister tonight?
Well, I'm sure Steve Allen, being used as the puppet for Brent Bozell, not thrilled that his company is being made fun of by Stephen Richards and company. All right. Next up, our third.
Was it like the first time you saw Steve Allen back at the old variety shows on the Dumont?
Oh, those were so much fun. Me and Stanislaw Sabisco.
The Dean Martin Comedy Hour.
Exactly. Sitting there laughing. Rowan and Martin's laughing. Okay. Next up, our third title match of the
Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Kukla, Fran. Mary, what's her name in Lamb Chop?
Sherry Lewis.
Sherry Lewis, thank you. I knew you. For some reason, Mike, I knew you would remember her name. Okay, so next up, our third title match of the evening, the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental title. Ooh, Sherry Lewis what? She was not European champion.
Intercontinental champion.
No, she wasn't. No, she wasn't either. I don't think Lamb Chop could win any belts. It was a sock with glued eyes.
Hey, anyway. Mr. Socko won titles.
Yes, he did, but not here. All right, the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship is on the line. Your champion, last time we talked, JR, it was China, if you remember. She won the title at SummerSlam. But something happened, and she wasn't anymore. Explain, JR.
So it took a little bit of a turn, Eddie and his mamacita. China was going to be in Playboy. Eddie was jealous, and there would be clips of him attempting to storm Hugh Hefner's mansion to stop the issue from taking place. Some pretty memorable scenes, him banging on the front door and trying to fight his way in.
Mm-hmm.
Rikishi showed one of the clips to China, and she got really upset. They had been having issues anyway, her and Eddie, a lot of trust issues. And they had been kind of fighting back and forth. And China was fed up with Eddie's nonsense and ready to cut him loose. And then at the last minute, Eddie asked her to marry him on the 9/21 SmackDown. Now, before that, they were in a triple threat match with the IC title on the line. China was knocked unconscious. Eddie went to pick her up. And when he laid her back down and hugged her, the ref counted three and Eddie won the title, which he kind of hid from China until the next week when China found out. She was really upset and thought, you know, that the IC title meant more to Eddie than their relationship did. So it really took a kind of a big hit, which, you know, it just put a chink basically in the armor of these two. And they had been pretty tight before that. But a lot of back and forth, a lot of, you know, one wanted to quit and Eddie playing a lot of the kind of, you know, scheming boyfriend where China would be upset and Eddie would turn it around and make it her fault. And he said, you know, you went on all these TV shows. You never mentioned me. You're doing Playboy. You never mentioned, you know, all the stuff. You never mentioned me. Why, you know, why are you the one that's upset? And Eddie really started to showcase more of his acting chops during this feud, too. So Eddie's your new IC champion. China was okay with it now that they're engaged. But you could tell that things weren't really quite as solidified as they should be. And then a couple weeks before this as well, China took Eddie's spot in a match with Rikishi. Eddie pretended he had the flu and he was sick. Mm-hmm. So China took care of him, went and took the match. And then before China was going to get squashed with the Banzai Drop. Rikishi gave Eddie a chance to come save her. He didn't, and then he squashed China with the Banzai Drop. And Eddie was basically just kind of begged off, and China was pissed about that too. So a lot going on with these two. The Playboy stuff is pretty interesting, and they were really pushing that magazine, obviously. King and JR mentioned a million times, both on TV and during this night here. What did you think of the new turn by Eddie, Mike? Did you kind of like where the storyline was going? I was getting a little done with them being a unit anyway.
I think that's where this was going, and I liked it. And I like, although I never really found China appealing, but that's another story. But I liked where this was headed, and I think the obvious heel turn was going to happen. But I think if they were going to do an Intercontinental title match, they should have just done Eddie and China here. Since Eddie would go out with injury, and you'll talk about that next time.
Right, well, I don't think they were ready to blow that off just yet, though. So I think this was really to continue things around.
Okay.
And, of course, China would get involved in another feud, although inadvertently a little bit later on, that would kind of help the storyline between her and Eddie and another couple people. The match is... It was all right. You could finally see now. I mean, I think this was the first. We were talked about at JR at SummerSlam that we were questioning Rikishi's kind of heat. You know, that it was still big with the fans, and it kind of surprised. We were kind of surprised it was still pretty strong. But I feel this was the moment now where he started to maybe dwindle a little bit. Where the face pops. Rikishi.
Yeah, Rikishi. I agree. He was definitely seen. I mean, he was still pretty booked, pretty strong, and he was really kind of the instigator in this whole thing. But yeah, I agree. He definitely was not anywhere near where he was early in the year.
No, I agree. Eddie, I think, was getting hotter and hotter. His in-ring work was still pretty good. Not great, but he had other things going on behind the scenes, sadly. But yeah, he wasn't doing too bad. And he would win this match by DQ. It's funny though. Both men were really on a roll, I felt. Rikishi was the face, and Eddie was the heel. But I feel like this match was kind of opposite their strengths. It's funny how every September things kind of go into bizarro world. But the match could have been a lot better. Sadly, it wasn't. But it wasn't. I wouldn't say it was terrible, but I feel like it could have been a lot better. And Eddie Guerrero retains the Intercontinental Championship by disqualification. So Eddie retains the title, and... he is marrying China. Good for him. All right. Backstage, Coach interviews The Undertaker, who says the other three men are in his yard. He's still
in
the
my yard on the big dog on the
blah,
man.
Blah, 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 blah. When he was spitting, he just seemed like a pissed off, grizzled old coot with sitting there with his bad.
Yeah, he was like a pull string toy.
Yeah,
quick,
was.
Pull the string. What's the? Oh, this is my yard. Yeah, pull the string. Oh, I'm gonna hit you with the last ride. Oh, pull the string. Oh, I'm the Undertaker. I'm the Fiend.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly. Yeah, he had the chaw, and he just looked. Yeah, it just looked.
He's Skinner except taller.
Yes. Yeah. Less work rate.
Wow. I think you just complimented Steve Kern. I didn't even realize it. That was just. All right. Next thing, Kurt Angle, who's kind of. Upset. He got the crap kicked out of him by Stone Cold, and now his match with Triple H coming up in a moment is now a no disqualification match. So he's a little distraught. In comes the now not managing any singles guys, Trish Stratus. Of course, she's still with TNA, but she was dumped by Val. Comes in and says, "If you need a friend, I'm here for you." Kurt says, "Thanks." And leave.
He barely even says thanks. He's like, "I gotta go. See you later."
I gotta go. See you later.
And that'll start a ongoing little thing here with Trish constantly kind of hitting on him and Kurt being oblivious, yeah. And that kind of starts here.
Yeah. All right. I guess what you could call the versus
oh Lord
baby, baby. Ooh, baby, baby, baby.
Little Beyonce.
Yes.
Not Beyonce. I don't know.
Maybe she covered this, but no, this is Linda Ronstadt. But I need to get as schlocky as possible, JR, because for the first time of what'll be a few over the next few years, the betrothed's battle.
Yes.
And this, of course, has a huge backstory. Give us a little. Now, a lot has happened since SummerSlam.
A lot.
Sure. Give us the lowdown.
Every little hoedown. The night after they both lost to The Rock at SummerSlam, the war between Angle and Triple H raged on. They had an in-ring confrontation where Hunter played up the concussion he gave Kurt the night before, while Angle accused Triple H of striking his wife as Hunter had accidentally struck Steph at SummerSlam. Stephanie was not in the house that night, and Kurt surmised maybe she was afraid of her husband and was hiding out. Hunter did not take that jab kindly, and a brawl broke out. Later in the show, feeling bad for his former running buddy, China went to comfort Triple H. After a quick pep talk, they embraced in an innocent hug. On that week's SmackDown, Angle and Steph had a confrontation in the ring, and Kurt played two tapes, one of Hunter decking her and the other of her husband hugging China. Later on, Steph stopped Hunter from attacking Kurt and slapped him in the face, questioning the hug with China. Hunter defended himself, but Steph was still leery, and Triple H stormed off to cool down. Later in the show, they tried to talk things out, but nothing was resolved. And courtesy, of course, Christopher Robin Zimmerman. Back in the dressing room, Triple H is back and wants to explain. Stephanie's right. He should have told her what happened. The hug was nothing, so she didn't think about it. She was right, and he was wrong. Stephanie says it was only because of their past history and their relationship that it hurts. I'm sorry. Stephanie's ready to accept it. She closes her eyes for a kiss, but Triple H says, you know what? I could say the same, but you and Kurt. And she says, Kurt and I are totally different. There's no past there. They're just friends. And so Hunter says, if you guys are just friends, why do you keep hugging? Why did he kiss you on SmackDown? He says, every week this guy's involved in our marriage, somehow trying to screw us up, constantly needling me, and the guy is constantly in my face doing something, hugging you, kissing you. Hunter starts breaking furniture, and Stephanie walks out. They made up later in the show, but as they're apologizing, a pair of cops came in and took Hunter away after somebody filed a complaint about his spousal abuse. The next Raw kicked off with a marathon promo session that saw Triple H blame Mick Foley for calling the cops. Foley explained it wasn't him, and all different people came out, and finally, Tess showed up and admitted to calling the cops, saying that Triple H was due some payback from the wedding from last year. Hunter stole his woman and his spot, the money, and the main event spot and everything else, and he had skyrocketed while Tess languished in the background.
Foley just obscurity.
Indeed. Foley decided they would settle things in the ring. Triple H picked up the win. The verbal and physical battles would continue over the next few weeks, with Foley stirring the pot along the way. In the midst of battling, a match was set for Unforgiven, and Foley named himself the special guest referee. The final SmackDown before the pay-per-view, Triple H came out firing, accused Kurt of being gay, with a video montage of questionable moments, including him weeping at the 96 Olympics and everything else.
That was actually the Raw before this.
Yes, I'm sorry, the Raw before this. After 4 weeks of dominating TV screens, Angle and Helmsley were finally set to throw down and battle over the woman that was the object of both their desires. Now, throughout the weeks here, it was clear that they were positioning Triple H as a face. Mm-hmm. He was kind of being goofy. He was being funny. He was kind of arguing with X-Pac when he looked for, you know, backup. It was clear that Angle is being positioned as the wife stealer and the shit stirrer. Both mm-hmm. by Mick Foley on commentary. I mean, on that Raw, Foley was even friendly with Triple H when they were doing all the kind of. I hated that segment. I thought it was so stupid. Like, to me, it felt so shoehorned in. Like, they had done so well building Triple H as kind of the sympathetic guy that Angle was fucking with, and then they go do that. It just made no sense to do the whole gay thing. I mean, it was clear. I mean, I don't know. Like, I got what they were going for with the whole, hey, if you want to be Steph's friend, you can take her shopping and all this stuff. And it felt, like, really forced and stupid. Like, I didn't think it was that funny.
I kind of had a feeling that this was leading toward what would happen in this match, because that's where the tone kind of changed. Because, like you said, JR, it was, you know, pretty much since SummerSlam, and even a little bit before that, it was positioned that Kurt was the the lech, and Stephanie was an innocent victim, and right. Hunter was just the husband getting his woman wormed away from him. And then all of a sudden, yeah, that promo happens. You're like, oh, it's kind of harsh, and it leads to what we talk about here in this match. The match is more evidence. I mean, Hunter was obviously on fire in 2000, mm-hmm. so that's fine, but. And Kurt had had some good matches, but I really think he showed a very vicious side of him here, which we hadn't seen because he hadn't been, you know, he hadn't had a match set like that. But he certainly took advantage of the gimmick and put himself over really strong as a guy that could that really when he's backed into a corner can really fight.
There were a lot of accusations by Kurt in this that really twisted the knife, like the whole wife beat. Like that was a pretty heavy storyline in this.
Yeah.
About the kind of spousal abuse stuff and everything else that he kept hinting at. And I mean, it really they really executed it very well to where it felt very real. Like, I could see why so many people were hooked on the storyline. I could see why women, the demographic was up and they were into it. Because it felt very real that Steph was having problems and you know, they couldn't get on the same page and things kept coming up and they kept getting screwed up. And Angle was there, really had a thing for her and kept getting in the way and you know, trying to break up the marriage. And it was all very real feeling. Mm-hmm. And It just screamed. It was a screaming for Triple H to get turned on. It was just, I mean, it was just all there. Like, the way Steph had kind of always been hinting how she liked Kurt and everything else, I think Triple H could have, if they did this the way they should have, and had Steph turn on him and go with Kurt, you would have made a mega, mega heel and a mega, mega face. Because there was no one that would not have felt bad for Triple H and built him up as a monster face. And nobody that wouldn't have fucking hated Kurt Angle for what he did and hated Stephanie. I think people were waiting to chair Triple H at this point. They had wanted to for a lot of the year due to his work rate. And they wanted to hate Stephanie and Kurt. And they just pissed it away, whether it was Hunter's insecurity or whatever other reason that they held off. Because they had Austin coming back. They didn't want another top-level face. I don't know what the reason was. But And I know Kevin's hinted before that it was, you know, he didn't want to have his wife stolen and made him look weak. And I'm sure he'll confirm that for us when we talk to him. But God, This turned a lot of people off. I mean, right around now is when, you know, we end the Chris Kresge run. Ratings start to dip a little bit, and they lost a lot of that female demographic that had really invested a lot of time into this love story. That just had this weird payoff where, all right, Steph low blows Kurt. Hunter wins. They you know, Hunter puts that violent kiss on her, and they walk out. And Steph still looks a little reluctant, but they don't really go anywhere else with it after. So just a letdown after this epic build that's been going on for months and months. Really started back in December with Steph and Kurt, and really in a hyperdrive for the last 2 months. And it just felt like very, all right, so nothing changed. I mean, like nothing. Hunter pins him clean pretty much after the low blow, and that's it. We're just done. It just really felt like the first time they fucked it up. You know, the first time they really fucked up a big storyline in a while now. Mike, do you agree with any of that?
I think the main thing is here that I think they should have maybe had Angle win here and maybe do another match the next month and continue this.
Well, do you think, though, that Steph should have turned?
Yes.
Yeah, she had to. And I'm fine if they turned. I'm fine if they held off in the rematch and you still go where you go, but then you have a ready-made world title match a couple months later if they want. You know, they come back to it. I don't know.
A better match for Survivor Series than what we got that year.
Oh, definitely. They fuck up a lot between now and Survivor Series that we'll talk about, but that was really the main. This was.
Well, you alluded to it, JR.
A miss wide right here.
Yeah, you alluded to it, and we'll get it. And I have a theory on that when we get to the next segment after the break, about why they did what they did, and this will be the first of many times over the next few years, why something that seems so easy to book ends up not being done for cumbersome, multi-layered reasons. And we'll get into that. This first reasoning we'll get into in our next segment. So the match itself is very good. Highly recommend it. I believe, according to our good friend Mr. Woodling, that this match is on Thy Kingdom Come, which comes out tomorrow. It shows... But more for Triple H, not as much for Triple H, I should say, more for Kurt Angle, that Kurt really stepped up here as a guy who, just because he had the, you know, the bright boots and the you know, the blue tights, and he was giddy and goofy and funny, but could be very vicious and really strike the shit out of you when he needs to, and he did in this match. I mean, Triple H, of course, was selling a rib injury from getting hit with a sledgehammer during this in the previous few weeks, and he really sold that. So Hunter was kind of, you know, That also gave him sympathy, wrestling with an injury. I mean, everything was ready-made. That's even more crazy, JR. He was wrestling with an injury, which is usually ready-made for babyfaces in matches, wrestling with an injury. It's even worse. Just so stupid.
I don't think Triple H actually got over as a babyface at this point. It didn't seem like he was.
I don't know.
You don't think he could have got over as a babyface?
Then again, I think the crowd in this match, like in the Rikishi Yeti match, is kind of flat too. So
I think he definitely would have got over as a face. Yeah, I think the fans are dying for it.
Yeah, I don't. It may not have seemed as obvious, Mike, but I definitely think that Hunter was ready to. That they'd built that every indication of this feud was that Stephanie was going to turn, cheat on Hunter, ditch him, go with Kurt, and Kurt, the lecherous homewrecker, gets the win, which is why the women's demographic blew up, and now you just made Hunter out to be a scumbag asshole husband, kiss your wife so hard you split her lip, and then she still looks disillusioned. And
they didn't blow it off significantly enough because they don't want to completely bury Kurt, and Hunter didn't want to lose his wife. So they just took kind of a lazy way out and then let it die. Like this storyline was so much invested that it needed a more proper blow off.
I think they could have maybe followed up on the whole bloody kiss that Triple H gave Stephanie after the match.
Mm-hmm. Her lip was swelling up pretty quick after he did that. So Triple H wins a match and stays a heel and comes off as a dick when really they it's almost like they forced him to act like that. It just was really strange. But we'll talk about after the break, in my opinion, why they did what they did. And again, JR, you alluded to it briefly. When we were talking about the match. So there you go. Triple H wins. Second time in 3 months he wins a pay-per-view non-title match. All right. We will take a break. We've got one big match left and then one big segment left as part of a big storyline. This is Unforgiven 2000 Inside the Vintage Vault. But before we continue with myself, JR, and Mike, let's pay some bills. Because...
you had to play that.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it! Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
Well, there they are, our good friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. If you want nonstop old school NWA discussion, dating back to that very first Starrcade, these guys have it covered. Even the PICs have made an appearance once. We are very particular what podcasts we visit. So check out our friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Their link is right on our site, placetobenation.com. Just go into the podcast menu. And there they are, with the other great shows we partner with. Chad and Parr, working Where the Big Boys Play. Speaking of Place to Be Nation, that's your everyday home for your pop culture needs. At placetobenation.com, we have everything. Wrestling, sports, comics, even polls. We want your opinions as well. Every day, there's something different with our top staff of writers who are experts in all fields of pop culture. From the weekly Raw review to the return of the hack, you've got everything you need. We're also working with a myriad of great podcasts, of course, besides Chad Parr. We have Grapple Talk, the fans podcast, Off the Top Rope, Answering the 10 Count, We Found New Music, and the Kings of Sport with Nate Milton. We've got everything for your listening pleasure. So check us out every day of the week at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Now, don't forget about our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. He's still the top source for all argument solvers, from match results to house show cards to pay-per-view histories. Any questions you need answered, any debates among wrestling fans that need ending, head over to Graham's treasure trove of information. You will certainly find it. Need to know what the opener of Starrcade 1995 was? What was the main event of that 1988 Boston Garden house show you went to when you were 11 years old? Graham can tell you. He has WWE, WCW, ECW results, and the growing results in TNA and Ring of Honor. So for all your wrestling research needs, check out Graham Cawthon at thehistoryofwwe.com. Now, finally, if you want a place to just hang out, discuss all things wrestling with fellow diehard fans, check out the news and the great forums at TWFnews.com. They have all the up-to-the-minute stories in WWE, TNA, and pretty much everywhere in between. They talk old school, Attitude Era, and even those hard-to-remember guys and shows like Waylon Mercy or In Your House Number 3. So check out all there is to see right on TWFnews.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Bruno Lawler. I'm on The Place to Be. You're listening to The Place to Be podcast. You know why? Because it's like Mama says, it be that way sometimes.
All right, Nation, we are back here in the midst of our review of Unforgiven 2000. Mike Poulin is with us, the 2013 PTB Trivia Tournament winner.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
We got one match and one major segment left, but first, let's take a quick sidebar. Talk about placetobenation.com. Continue to roll. Got a lot of cool things going on, Scott. Podcasts are rolling. If you missed the brand new Wrestling with the Past on cage matches. Really cool stuff, of course, capitalizing, you know, coming off the Bret Hart one, which is really good, and now cage matches. They talk about all the different ones, through NWA, WWF, and all the other indies. Also, a very meaty article by Andrew Reich today, recapping the Toronto Film Festival. If you're a film buff, especially indie and otherwise, Andrew really goes deep into this thing,
as he generally does.
I went digging through my treasure trove, Scott. I reviewed the Tough Enough 1 casting special from July of 2001.
Personal favorite.
Of course, Lita Clark has the hidden tragedy of Sergeant Calhoun up. Jim Calhoun. Jeremy Nichols, House of Horror, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 from 1986. Mm-hmm. Our Vintage Vault, Royal Rumble 1989, repost is up. Callum Leslie had a great UFC 165 analysis, a big fight between Jones and Gustafson. Mm-hmm. Him and Roger Morissette live blogged that, and Tommy Gunn on Saturday night. So check that out as well if you want to relive that fight. Tommy and Greg Go to the Movies, brand new podcast debuting. They take a look at Mr. Nanny, Scott. That's like the one Hogan movie we haven't really done yet.
Yes.
You have all the other podcasts we usually have, Off the Top Rope, Answering the 10 Count, of course, and our weekly reviews. Big time coaches on the hot seat. Todd Gessling looking at the coaches that could be looking at unemployment line in the world of college football. Mm-hmm. Adam Murray made his debut. What happened to the new and original music piece there, and Adam's going to be joining us to do music columns, and we look forward to having that. So it's a one section we've been looking to beef up, and Adam will do a great job there. So a lot of stuff going on. We have some new writers still to come, and of course lots of columns, lots of sports really picking up now with football and basketball coming up. We're gonna have a lot of NBA, a lot of college hoops content. Mm-hmm. And of course all your TV previews are here as well. We had some go up last week. We have more. One will be up tomorrow on Tuesday, previewing all the new ABC comedies by Todd Weber. Jen Engel and myself are going to preview Parenthood, Mr. Flanagan doing Bob's Burgers and a couple other shows. So lots of TV previews, anything you could possibly want in the world of pop culture, wrestling, sports. And of course, Richard and the Mailman will be up Tuesday morning as well, looking at the newest episode, the penultimate episode of Breaking Bad as well. And of course, one more piece to plug. Roger Morissette also did a look at why the Browns won the Trent Richardson trade. Of course, that news broke late last week. And Roger was all over that. So sports, movies, TV, music, MMA, wrestling, it's all there. Comics, of course, tons of comic stuff at placetobenation.com. Please join us. And if you want to chip in, feel free to chip in as well. You can hit us up via email, Twitter at placetobenation, and on facebook.com/placetobenation as well. Always looking for contributors. If you want to submit a sample, we'll run it through the gauntlet, see if you make it. And we'll add you to the staff if so. Other than that, just keep reading and sending your feedback in. And things you want to see or ask, let us know. So, also, mailbag at placetobenation.com. Scott and I will answer any emails. We're going to be doing one soon. Yes. We have a bunch piled up in there. So bring your questions on any topic, and Scott and I will respond to them in the mailbag format.
Outstanding.
All right, let's get back
to the show. You're very good at that, JR. Thanks. Good pitch, man.
That's right.
You could sell a 78 Pinto.
I have.
You could sell a Crown Vic at at the 99 Survivor Series. All right.
Pintos.
Speaking of Crown Vics at the 99 Survivor Series, out comes Shane O'Mac himself, Shane McMahon.
He had just returned too on the week before this on TV.
Yes,
he'd been out
the beating
SummerSlam.
He took at SummerSlam. Right. He announced on Heat as we talked about earlier, that he had video evidence to prove who was the one that ran over Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I'm the one. Fuck you.
Exactly. At the 1999 Survivor Series. So, he plays a video clip. He gets to the ring and plays a video clip. But the video clip is not of the night of Survivor Series when he ran over Stone Cold. Or when
and
the
he had hinted in
Cold.
His promo the week before that it may be Vince. That was what his hint was on TV.
Yes. Yes. Instead, we get a video clip from earlier in 1999. Probably like September. And we're not making it up because any excuse to play Steve Blackman's yes. music more than once is good enough for us. He plays a clip from like September where from a September Raw where Steve Blackman backed into Ken Shamrock mm-hmm. with his car as they were having that awesome feud in the summer of 1999. And then he pretty much says, there you go. There's your proof. Steve Blackman is the one who hit Steve Austin. Of course, that made zero sense.
Well,
but
of course, yeah. Shane just wanted – he was just still trying to get revenge on Blackman. So yeah. Blackman comes out, but before anything happens, Austin comes out, and Austin basically doesn't buy it. And he ends up attacking Blackman, drops him with a stunner, and then Shane is awesome here. Shane starts celebrating. He thinks Austin's in on it. He goes and grabs some beers. They're celebrating. They're drinking. And then Austin stuns him three times and walks off. So we still don't know who the driver, mystery driver was. Still a mystery. And you knew he was going to carry over to get you to watch the new TNN Raw the next night.
Mm-hmm.
A couple things here. Did you like the fake out? Did you think this was good enough just to get Austin on the pay-per-view like they promised? Second, what did you think of the Blackman stuff? And third, what did you think of Austin's new theme music, the new Disturbed version?
Okay, number one, he obviously didn't have a match set, so you couldn't just give him a match out of air. So so having him here was fine. I mean, it was setting up, the future of this storyline, which the continuity was there, which is good. Number two, using Blackman, I think, was a good idea. Obviously, he was a character that was working his tail off, and he was looking good. He obviously was red hot being hardcore champion. So, so that worked. And number three, it was okay. I think fans kind of will always like his original music. I didn't have a total problem with it. It would change again in the following year, and we'll comment on that one. But this one, it was okay. It had a little sizzle to it. I like the original one better, but this one wasn't bad. It was okay. But the segment as a whole, I thought was fine. It got Steve on the show. Crowd got pumped about it and set up, the next night on TNN. So you knew there was going to be, there wasn't going to be any real closure this easily to this storyline. But it was a good way to get. It was a good way to get him on the show and. We didn't have enough time anyway. We weren't going to make a match out of nowhere, so it was fine. It was fine. What did you think, Mike?
I'll answer all three, and I'll ask you guys a question after that. The first one being that, I don't think we were going to get a payoff here, although a lot of people, I'm sure, did think we were going to get a payoff. But I don't think we were going to get a payoff here solely because I don't think it would have made sense to pay it off here. Because you probably wanted to run with this until Survivor Series. As for the theme, I thought they should have actually used the H-Box one that they had on the WWF The Music from the previous year.
Hmm.
I like this one. I think I like this one better than that one.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I didn't know who Disturbed was at the time.
Yeah, I thought they probably should have stuck with the original, but I didn't mind this one. I thought it was definitely like louder and wilder. It kind of made sense with this more manic since his return. He's kind of more maniacal here, looking for who ran him over and everything else.
The bionic redneck.
Yeah, it kind of was more like angst ridden. I liked it. I didn't.
Which
have
probably was more of a play on his backstage character at this point too.
Yeah, there was a lot more. Yeah, there was a lot going on. Obviously, very angry. But I liked this version. I didn't have too much of a problem with it.
Yeah, no, me neither. I liked it too. It added a little. I still like the original, but this was fine. It needed to have a little edge added to it. I was fine with that. So, all right, so there you go. Steve Austin does not believe Shane McMahon and stuns him a few times.
By the way, my question is, do you think Shane ever drank before this segment?
Yes, I think he's drank many times.
Yes, exactly. We're talking about a Greenwich High School kid. He probably drank when he was 15. Yeah, it was a good segment, but obviously you weren't going to – you're right, Mike. They weren't going to solve anything here.
It wouldn't have made sense.
No, I don't think you would. He was there to
– No, they wanted you to carry over to Raw the next night.
Yeah,
without a doubt.
Although I do love at the beginning of the show how they say, however many people are in the crowd, it's sold out in 2 months because they all knew Stone Cold was going to be there. I don't think they knew that two months beforehand.
Yeah, I don't remember when they officially announced that he'd be there. Maybe they might have been advertising it locally. I mean, there's a chance.
There's a chance, but I don't think they announced it on TV until SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Probably in like the promo that they show after the show or something. This has been sold out for 2 months in anticipation for Austin. Yeah, they probably didn't know 2 months ago or when they bought tickets, depending on how long the tickets went on sale by that point.
I get the feeling that this is almost like a mini version of the 91 Survivor Series when it was all about pimping up this Tuesday in Texas. You almost feel like to a certain extent, not a lot. But you did feel that they were more pumping. Like, this show was just here, but it was more making sure you watched Raw the next night on TNN.
Watch Raw!
Yeah. They should have done what other cable networks do and, you know, promote what station they were on, what station number based on your cable company, that kind of thing they should have done. I don't think they did that enough, and I think that was probably ultimately the problem with the bad ratings. So. All right, Michael Cole, frosty hair and all, was at the broadcast table. Now he's interviewing the World Wrestling Federation champion, The Rock. Throw some barbs at his opponents as we get ready for our main event for the World Wrestling Federation Championship.
Oh, boy.
TB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
Yo, it's the fucking motherfucking Mac Daddy, Daddy Mac, Vincent Kennedy McMahon Jr. here with your motherfucking Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Rob Houston, YMCA, fuckface douchebag update. Sometime in September, Jim Duggan did something with some people from Canada, and then in Kisher, Ontario, on September 18th, he teamed with Lance Storm and Elix Skipper to defeat Hugh Morris, Chavo Guerrero, Lash LaRue. What kind of fucking job fest is this? September 26th, Jindrak and O'Hare defeated Duggan and Elix Skipper, and that's it. Criscolo, what's going on?
How are you, VKM? Did you have a good weekend?
I'm fucking living fine and fancy free. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Missed you at the
XFL's in full force, baby.
Yeah, I missed you at the shenanigans in Rhode Island this weekend. I thought maybe Justin invited you. I guess you were.
I was too busy traveling the Pacific Northwest with the Pussy Posse.
That's right. That is quite true. That is quite true. Tonight, JR, just let Vince. We're talking about Unforgiven 2000.
I fired JR. I mean, he retired.
JR, Vince.
Who's that?
This is our special.
Mike Poulin, Vince.
Oh, Mike Poulin. Well then, I'll just sit in the corner while you talk.
Oh, go ahead and
I got a trivia question for you, Poulin.
Yes.
What should Mike Poulin do while Vincent Kennedy McMahon Jr. is on the podcast?
Shut up.
Sit down and shut the fuck up, you asshole.
VKM, what's been
Spit
going
it
on?
Out.
What did the P-Square do this weekend floating around the Pacific Northwest?
They're a lot of bitches, I'll tell you that much. I wasn't sitting on the fucking freeway like some jabroni with a flat tire. I laughed at you as I drove by in my limo. I saw you standing there like an idiot.
Yeah, I saw the limo go by.
You should learn how to fix a flat tire. It would help you.
You do realize the empty Ciroc bottle almost went through my windshield, and I was going to make you pay for that with your TNN money.
You're lucky I couldn't get the match lit in time to throw out after the fucking bottle of alcohol. Light you right up on fire.
Oh, Claire would not have wanted you to waste such a nice Ciroc bottle on fire. Come on, VKM. You're more economical than that.
Griscolo, what are you reviewing tonight?
Unforgiven 2000.
Who's on the cover of that tape? Who was on the poster?
The Undertaker was on the poster.
Who was on the program?
Well, you had Triple H versus Kurt Angle, no DQ.
Was that the big match? Is this the thing with the Stephanie gimmick?
Yes. And he kissed your daughter hard and split her lip.
You know, I found this pay-per-view very interesting, Griscolo, because it plays along a beautiful parallel to one of my favorite TV shows of all time.
Oh, really?
Now, you know, I promised you some 1990s fan fiction. You ready?
Yes.
Ah! Da-da-da-da! 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 Da-da-da-da-da-da-da! It all started back in high school when Brenda Walsh was away in France meeting Superman and pretending to be Rene Goulet. Her boyfriend Dylan McKay was whining and dying the voluptuous Kelly Taylor. After bringing her to dinner to meet his dad MacGyver, Dylan professed his feelings for Kelly and proceeded to bone her in the swimming pool, Mike McGurk style. Brenda returned after weeks of awkward denials and hand-wringing. Kelly and Dylan finally came clean and told Brenda the truth. She snapped, as any marginally attractive poor actor would. Brenda vowed that she would never forgive the two for stabbing her in the back. And then she left. The following year saw Dylan and Kelly have an up-and-down relationship that finally tapered off and ended due to Dylan's demons stemming from the depth of his father at the hands of Mrs. Poole. She was always very vindictive about Sandy Duncan's lazy eye replacing Valerie Bert and Ernie for no good reason. As Dylan solidified his slot in the Pussy Posse by sinking his sorrows into mountains of cocaine and alcohol, Kelly moved on to the next one. In a secret rendezvous to Washington, D.C., that cad Brandon Walsh used his charm, whimsy, and wits to win over Kelly's heart. It looked like we finally had a brand new golden couple in our lives, a couple that would rule the kingdom of Beverly Hills for a year to come. But then tragedy struck. Kelly Taylor cut her hair. Things were never the same, Criscolo. She got all fucked up. Like a buxom, beautiful Samson, her powers were now gone. She fell in love with a lesbian, and just when they were going all Pat Patterson in the bathroom of a rave, a fire started and scarred them both for life, physically and emotionally. Kelly was slipping away, and Brandon knew it. Criscolo, I knew it. I couldn't stay composed any longer. Remember that diesel title reign? It was me hurting myself and the pain I felt over the downward spiral of Kerry Taylor. King Mabel? That was punishment for Kelly getting sucked into that cult with Auntie Armento in the wheelchair. That creepy, self-serving, ugly mind fucking piece of garbage of a man. It was dark times, Criscolo. As dark as the heart of Jim Walsh. By the time Kelly broke free from Armento, it was clear that it was now cleaned up Dylan wanted his bitch back. And he moved right in on his bro. And he put a gift into the lap of Kelly, Jim Price style. A trip around the world. To counteract that, Brandon tossed a punk card down and asked Kelly to be his wife. Swallow his seed and produce another Walsh to rule the world. Does it sound familiar? It should. I've lived it, Criscolo.
Yes, you have.
Finally, on a balmy summer evening outside the Peach Pit, Kelly was forced to make her decision. And this is how it went. Can I talk to you guys? You've made my life very difficult these past 2 days, and it hasn't been easy. I love you both. I know you don't believe it, but it's true. Brandon, I can't accept this. But wait. Dylan, have a nice trip. I can't go with you. Not this time. I've made my choice. And I choose me. I love you both until the day I die. As Kelly walks away, Dylan pulls out a knife and tries to stab Brandon. But Brandon slips behind the pit and makes a quick call to Deshaun Hardell. In a split second, Deshaun and Steve Sanders arrive on the scene and challenge Dylan to a 3-on-3 hoops showdown. Dylan accepts the challenge and recruits David and Mel Silver. Despite the Jewish bloodlines, the Silvers could ball with the best of them, but Deshaun overwhelmed them on the glass, and just like Triple H, Walsh never loses. As the game wraps up, we cut over to the inside the Peach Pit kitchen, where loud moans echo throughout the room. The camera fades inside the freezer where Kelly's going down on Nat Pasuccio, the man she chose to be with. She had an eye on that Peach Pit fortune, Criscolo. As we zoom out of a wide shot, we see Claire Arnold recording the whole betrayal. So tell me, Criscolo, how closely does the storyline mirror the one you're discussing on this show?
So you're comparing Kurt Angle to Nat from the Peach Pit?
And those lame marks on the internet think I don't watch pop culture. Fuck you, Keller! Suck it, Meltzer! I'm out of here, bitch! No, not the new Naruto Rotella. Not the one with that stupid weird-ass Indian kid. This is old school. I got the DVDs at home if you want to watch them all. We'll start from the beginning. Right to the end when Steve marries that Asian chick. And that weird-ass creepy guy, that lawyer, comes into the picture. And then Dylan comes... Yeah, Andrea came back too. Right. And then all that shit with Donna and David. Fucking shit never ended. How did Brenda not come back? I don't get it. I don't know, Claire. We're out of here. Get the DVDs fired up. Let's go see if we can find Criscolo on 95 again. Vince loves him, so now 2-0.
Welcome to my life every Monday night, Mike Poulin. at least if Kelly wasn't going down on Lynn Belvedere. That would really been a disaster. I forgot about the Asian chick Steve Sanders marries. Wow, I gotta start watching it myself.
Well,
and Brenda didn't come back because she was too expensive. The CW or WB or whatever, or Fox, whatever network. 902.1 I was on at the time. I don't remember at this point. I thought it switched. Maybe it didn't. Just didn't want to pay her. She was too expensive.
They couldn't afford to pay her.
Just like Jim Walsh. I don't think he came back either for the same reason. Can't believe you thought Jim Walsh was evil. Terrible.
Well, think of what he did to Brenda and Dylan. Got them apart.
Yeah. Evil. It's that Minnesota thinking.
Evil.
All right. Speaking of evil. Big evil. The Undertaker.
Oh, God.
Big fat evil. All right.
He's about as welcome as Derek LaRue.
Our World Wrestling Federation championship match.
That'll make fun of my boyfriend.
Oh, God.
Where'd you come from?
Speaking of bigger and fatter.
I'll see you later, baby.
Our World Wrestling Federation championship.
Why do you sound like Beavis or Butthead?
Maybe it is. All right.
You're supposed to interrupt when Vince announces Kane. Vince, what did you say again?
Yeah, it's Kane.
Yeah. Damn it. Anyway, a fatal four-way for the World Wrestling Federation championship.
Gotta be Kane!
Ah, there we go. He's here. The Undertaker. The Undertubby. Chris Benoit, who felt he was wronged at Fully Loaded. And, of course, The Rock. Now, over these past 4 weeks, a lot of guys had number one contender matches, and they all interfered in each other's stuff, and... And Foley decided, fuck it, all three of you were going to get number one.
Yeah, they kept Kane and Benoit had like 8 million number one contender
DQ
matches.
DQ run-ins and all this other shit. So Foley decided, fuck it, all three of you are going to get a match with The Rock in a four-way at Unforgiven, which of course sucks for The Rock because he can lose the title and not be pinned.
Did you think this is lazy?
Yeah, this is very lazy. I was not leaning forward to this whatsoever.
Well, it was clear that they were focusing on Kurt and Triple H was the main event of the show.
Yeah,
I mean, that's very clear that this was thrown together just to put these guys on the card, give Rock a match. And I think they actually put Rock in the title feud that didn't have a lot of heat behind it on purpose. I think they did it to make sure the heat stayed on Triple H and Kurt. I think they made this kind of antiseptic on purpose.
Probably. And it just gave all the main eventers something to do. Yeah. Would you have still put this match last?
Yeah, because that was their thing this year. Title matches were always last.
Well, that's the way it's technically kind of supposed to be. But this match is just so... There's two things about this match that piss me off. Obviously, the main one is The Undertaker is just so slow. And look, when he had the dead man gimmick, I understood being very deliberate, very, you know, took his time in the ring. That's different. You can tell the gimmick carried that kind of style. This was different. This just seemed he was slow and lazy and bored. There's a difference. And it felt different in my opinion. What did you think, Mike? Did you just feel that this was a different Taker than the one, even in 99 when he was, you know, when he had torn muscles everywhere, he still even felt a little more motivated than he was here. What did you think of that?
The only good thing about the biker gimmick, although it kind of ripped off a Metallica song, was his music.
Well, no, the theme was great, but this was just, I mean, obviously a Kid Rock at the moment, but you know, things would change. This was he just was so slow. And anything with Kane is just bad. That just never got any better. The other thing that annoyed me about this is, did we need yet another...
Oh, I hated that.
Another Benoit Dusty finish. Now it's more... Now you legitimately felt like that Vince was fucking around with the fans.
And I thought...
The first time it Fully Loaded, It was still annoying, but right. All right, it was fine. Shane was involved. It was a lot more. There was a lot more chicanery involved. This was just stupid.
And I will say this: I thought heading into this match that there was a chance Benoit may win the title. I really thought that going in. They had built him up pretty strong.
There were a few people that thought that I talked to. Yeah.
And so when they did the finish, I was like, oh, all right, they did it. And then, yeah, they screw him again. And I know, I mean, in a way, it made him look okay because it made him look he was capable again of winning the title.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously he cheated to do it. I didn't think it was necessary. I don't really see what they gained by doing it. I made just the false pop in Philly, I guess. But to me, it didn't really make much sense.
No, I thought it was stupid. Made him look. I don't want to say made him look weak, but it had that cheesy. It had that cheesy feel to it. Yeah, it had that cheesy feel to it. So I definitely agree. I think it was silly to have this. So, Mike, what did you think? Do you think this was kind of a cheesy? Cheesy ending?
On this. First of all, yeah, I agree that the ending was stupid, but they said all throughout the match that you didn't have to pin the champion to win, right?
Right.
So why was the decision changed when the champion wasn't pinned?
Well, didn't he cheat? Isn't that why?
He used a chair, but wasn't the referee knocked out?
Right, but isn't that why Foley reversed it? Or did he say because he didn't pin the champion? I thought it was because he used the chair.
No, Taker's foot was on the rope.
Oh, right. I knew there was something more than just he didn't pin the champion.
Taker's foot was on the rope. That's why.
Which nobody caught, apparently.
Yeah, well.
The old Phantom finish.
Yeah, Foley did, apparently. This leads me to something else. The other reason this annoyed me, wouldn't you have thought that if you were going to keep doing this to Foley to Benoit, wouldn't you have thought we'd have a Foley-Benoit match? Or feud? Because this is twice in 3 months now that because of Foley, Benoit is not the WWF champion. So you would have thought if they were going to keep doing this, wouldn't you have thought that this would eventually lead to a Foley-Benoit match?
Or Benoit versus the man kind of thing. But
yeah.
I guess. I mean, he did cheat. It's like Foley really screwed him.
Yeah.
I don't know. The whole thing is just, clearly a time filler. The match is fine. Rock retains his title. Continues his run here into late 2000 as champ. Of course, he's had as his King of the Ring. So, you know, he's finally having a lengthy run with the title for the first time in a while. But, yeah, it was a fine match to end the show. Nothing special. The show as a whole, kind of up and down. I think the Kurt Triple H match is clearly the centerpiece of the show based on the angle, and the match is pretty good, probably the best they'll have. I thought the tag cage match was really good. And the rest was solid enough. So this is just kind of a, not a must see for me, but definitely one I didn't mind watching again today. I thought the crowd was so hot, the product is so hot, it's still fun to watch. So yeah, pretty much a down the middle of the road pay per view here. Mike, what did you think on the show as a whole?
I think other than like it's a fine show. I think too that a lot of people probably ordered to see the Triple H angle and probably the Hardys, Edge and Christian and Austin coming back. So I think. Kind of for the third month in a row, or second month in a row here, Rock is overshadowed a little bit by all three of those things. Because it's kind of like, oh, all these things happened. Oh, yeah, Rock had a title defense.
Right.
And then, which I think they should have done a title match the next night, which I don't think they did, for the Spike TV Raw. To make that actually a bigger show, like a WWF title match.
Right, yeah, they didn't.
Because I know they did a tag title ladder match in the opening match from what I remember, or the second match.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, this show is probably, it's okay, but it's not like, it's a show you could probably skip and not feel bad about skipping. It's okay, but it's not great.
All right, Scott, your final thoughts?
Again, I think it was kind of like a mini repeat of the 91 Survivor Series into this Tuesday in Texas. I think a lot of it was all about the Raw the next night on the new network, and it was kind of a pain in the ass. But the show as a whole was okay. I mean, Kurt and Triple H was a good match. Silly payoff. The title match was kind of forgettable, and the rest of the show was all right, nothing crazy.
All right, so there is your Unforgiven 2000. No feedback tonight. So we'll go ahead and wrap things up. Scott will be back Wednesday night. We have the big PTB PWO Summit, our first one.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be doing a look at tag teams and who is the better member of each team. Chad Campbell is going to lead the conversation.
Ooh,
he'll be on.
Interesting.
It is going to be
interesting. Speaking of tag teams, I listened to your tag tournament thing that you did on the podcast last week. I'm surprised there was no Power and Glory mentioned.
I know. I was very upset.
That was a planted question. What did you tell him to say?
I was very upset. I didn't tell him anything. I was very upset. Chad, again, screwed up the list, didn't include Power and Glory.
How far were they really gone? How many of you?
All the way.
You spent enough time trying to push the Twin Towers, for God's sake.
Yeah, the Twin Towers.
They wanted to
Twin
Towers.
If you had your way, the four finalists would have been Power and Glory, the Twin Towers, the Quebecers, and...
Yes.
So anyway...
Captain Lou Albano.
So anyway, Wednesday night...
Yes.
Yoshida, Captain Lou managed every team that advanced. So Wednesday night, we'll be back with the summit. Chad, of course, leading the conversation. Peter and Charles... from the PWO as well. So we're going to have two PWO guys, me and you, and then kind of the straddler, Chad, will lead the discussion there. And we're going to do these things regularly. We have a few more planned as well. So that should be a lot of fun. Two very knowledgeable guys.
We'll listen to that later in the week.
All right. Next Monday, we'll be back with No Mercy 2000. And then next Wednesday, we have headlines leading into the Battleground pay-per-view. So we'll do some current stuff. So for Mike Coolin and Scott Criscullo, I'm Justin Rosero. We'll talk to you Wednesday night at the Summit.
Good night, everybody.
Well, you're an idiot. You shouldn't have left it on the side of the road. You knew he'd be around there somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I should have just stayed in the middle of the road and let a truck plow over it. That would have been easy.
It would have been diesel. The people keep on riding. And we should always wear.